On the Sideshow Countdown, that was Disturbed with Another Way to Die. That's it for us today. I'm Nikki Sixx.
I'm Carrie Kasem.
And we'll see you next week. We're going to count down the biggest songs in rock. See ya.
The Sideshow is now over. Go ahead, stick a golden fork in it. We're done.
Now.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Welcome to WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan. Peter and Jolene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Jolene.
Hey, welcome everybody. Welcome to the show. Jolene Jordan, how are you tonight?
Great, Peter. Glad to have you back. I missed you last week.
Yeah, I saw some of the emails. People liked you doing it solo. Some people giving you a hard time. But hey, they give me a hard time.
Yeah, did they give me a hard time? That one guy did. Was there more?
Well, I sent you everything. And
you
looked at the...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, those were simple, easy little problems to deal with.
This is Night Call. Me, Peter Werby, and Jolene Jordan. Our phone number, 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
If you'd like to email us, and some people already have, I've been off for 2 weeks. Yeah. Wait till you see this one. It's up there already at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. That's if you would like to... emails, and make them short, and maybe we'll read them on the air. If you want to make them a little longer, I probably can't, or Jolene can't read them till tomorrow. So welcome to Detroit's most progressive political talk show. We're committed to peace and social and economic justice.
It's true.
It's true. We are. Well, there is a bit of good news out there. They're actually plugging. You thought I was going to be cynical or facetious or humorous, right?
No, yeah, I did.
They have finally plugged this leak in the Gulf, and it looks like it's going to be permanent unless they screw up again.
Right, yeah.
But they're going to try today, or I guess tomorrow, as early as Monday evening. It's a so-called static kill. You know, they always have these bizarro names.
It's almost like the names of the operations over in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah. Maybe they ought to have it, Operation Static Kill.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so that's the good news. The bad news is, of course, that there is another oil spill.
Oh, my gosh.
In Michigan.
Yeah, this is really sad.
And Governor Granholm said, if this gets to Lake Michigan, we are in for one world of a hurt.
I mean, is this not a sign of why they need to close these down.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought you were going to have like some religious sign or something.
No. That's not happening tonight. No.
Yeah. Governor Jennifer M. Granholm expressed growing worry, well, this is on Wednesday, that an oil spill, see, I just got back in town, believed to be among the largest ever in the Midwest, might reach Lake Michigan. I think they've stanched it by now. Almost a million gallons of oil spilled Monday into the Kalamazoo River. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I mean, how many more of these do we need? These happen all the time. I mean, we know the Exxon Valdez, and then some of us may know that the, a lot of area of Nigeria and of... what's the, I forgot the South American country now. Hello. Mm. Bolivia, Ecuador, one of those countries right in there. Why is this not popping to my brain? But in any event, that, as I've always said, our dependence on oil, in fact, on all fossil fuels, is just deadly to us and deadly to the planet. And I don't know, how many more calling cards do we need?
You know, I noticed also that Exxon is now beefing up their advertising dollars, yeah, trying to take advantage of the downfall of BP. It's like the war of the oil companies.
Yeah. Well, get this. Despite the April 20th Deepwater Horizon disaster, BP has no plans to leave the Gulf of Mexico or to stop drilling for oil in other deepwater oceans. And just the opposite, according to the New York Times. Hey, let me say, a couple of you have written in and they say, you know, the New York Times sucks and they're always lying. And this is people like progressives. And, you know, I'm not recommending the Times. It reports often, although not
There's
always.
There's often good information.
Good
in
information.
There.
But what we make of that, that's up to us. Just the opposite, though, with BP. With its runaway well apparently under control, the troubled oil giant is now staking its future more than ever on deep-water wells. Although such wells are far riskier than land-based or shallow-water ones, oil fields that are located under a mile or more of water can be extremely lucrative. So that's what they care about, obviously. They're a corporation, right?
Yeah.
And, the environment be damned, people's
yeah.
livelihoods be damned,
that's right.
Any of that. BP continues to see them as worth the risks. Well, what
to,
are they suffering
for? Yeah. It's worth it to them because no matter the spill or not, they're still making billions of dollars.
Yeah, reflecting that strategy, BP announced on Tuesday that it had agreed to sell $7 billion of oil and gas fields to the Apache corporations. Boy, I bet the Apache... the Indians appreciate that.
Yeah.
The assets being sold in Texas, New Mexico, Western Canada, and Egypt are all on land. So they're selling those off to get money that they need. But the deal is not just about money. Although BP, based in London, could have raised the funds by selling valuable deepwater assets, it decided to dispose of onshore assets instead. Analysts say the choice shows that BP is committed to deepwater drilling despite the prospect of increased global regulation of such wells and an effort in Congress to bar the company from receiving new drilling permits in the Gulf. Now, here, you'd think they're... Let me see if I can get to this one real quickly.
Well, and the politicians are so tied in with these oil companies, they're not.
Sure.
That's not going to happen here.
Now, the one I was looking for was the most important, and that is... here. Four oil firms commit $1 billion for Gulf Rapid Response Plan. People say, well, maybe they've learned something because it took so long for them to get everything in place. Four of the world's largest oil companies said on Wednesday they are committing $1 billion. Man, maybe they're going to become good corporate citizens.
Now, isn't that what they make in like 2 weeks?
Yeah, they got that in their front pocket.
All right.
They're going to create a rapid response system to deal with deep water oil spills in the Gulf of Mexico, seeking to restore public confidence in the industry after the BP disaster painfully exposed how unprepared the industry was for a major accident. Hmm. Now, what's the message here? Does anybody, I know you get this. I mean, everybody must get this, right? They're expecting another one.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Hello.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
We can all expect that.
So that's what's happening. And the other thing, let's see, as oil industry fights a tax, it reaps subsidies. You know, so much for the free market that all these conservatives love. They're highly subsidized and they're fighting any tax on them whatsoever. They're also pursuing an Alaska drilling site that some call risky. I like that. I like that.
Some call risky. That's just so warming. And, I just feel so relaxed.
Right now, there's 27,000 abandoned oil and gas wells in the Gulf of Mexico.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's that. All right. But do I quote this all the time? E.E. Cummings, the American poet, who a line in one of his poems says, "I don't want to startle you, but they mean to kill us all."
You haven't said that one for a long time.
Hey, yeah, like,
you laugh, right?
Yeah, I don't know why. 313-298-WRIF. If you'd like to get on the air, express some opinion about something we haven't even talked about, feel free as well. I'm just sort of, all this stuff came to me while I was on vacation.
Why is this happening? Why do you go on vacation and think about this?
I read the New York Times, but I did not once look at the internet. I didn't have access to
okay.
it. I didn't have any cell phone access.
This is what's happening to me on Wednesday. And I'm unplugging on Wednesday. I won't be here next week, but the I'll be just as feisty when I come back the following week.
Right. Let's talk about the war on drugs.
Oh.
War on drugs? I can't even drive on drugs.
War on drugs? It's not working.
No. Despite claims by the United States and Mexico that drug traffickers are feeling the effects of the country's joint offensive, a review by the Government Accountability Office, the GAO, has found that millions of dollars have been spent without enough regard for whether the money is doing any good or not.
Mm.
You know, there's a way that these folks in the New York Times write that is, I don't know whether you could call it like understatement or what, but also, I guess if I was writing this, I would write it like this. A review by the GAO has found that millions of dollars of taxpayer money.
Yeah, exactly. Let's tell the facts.
Spent. Right. So I just saw this. Oh, wait a minute. This is not, I did not bring this, but since the war on drugs began, this was launched by Nixon, the United States has spent $1 trillion. $1 trillion
wow.
combating people's desire to change their consciousness. Because
what a waste.
They're protecting us, right? They don't want us to become victims to the drug menace. Well, a lot of people have, just like a lot of people have become alcoholics, and a lot of people have become addicted to cigarettes. I mean, certainly one aspect, one intoxicant has an aspect that is pretty harmless, and, you know, marijuana. Nobody's ever died from that. But what has, of course...
They maybe thought they were the first time they did it.
right. what it's created of a couple of things, of course, is this enormous criminal enterprise, and then a parallel legal operation that has become the prison industrial complex. So it's the $1 trillion that's been spent of our money to combat this, which all it really does, talk about the market, it has artificially raised the price, because what it's done is created artificial scarcity, because it doesn't all come through. I forgot what we consume. It's something, oh man, I just saw this figure, something like 270 metric tons. And, it was a review I was reading of a new book about cocaine that I'm going to interview the author. And they said all of what the United States users of cocaine consume in a year could fit in 13 semis.
Really?
Yeah, except they don't bring it across like that. You know, they bring it back in a variety of ways.
Yes.
You know, incredible ingenuity to satisfy this consumer market.
Yeah.
Right?
And I'm still surprised it's as big as it is. Coke.
Yeah. Well, I don't even hear of that anymore. I mean, in the entertainment biz in the 80s, oh, my God. God.
Yeah, it was a big snowstorm.
It was. But in any event, it's, wait a minute, where is that one little piece? So it used to be, I'm going to be interviewing John Sinclair, the poet provocateur, former manager of the MC5, 1 a.m. tonight.
Very cool. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm definitely tuning into that.
He has written a book on Sun Ra, the composer and pianist. The guy said he'd come from Saturn.
He's so interesting, John Sinclair.
Yeah, well, so is Sun Ra.
He might even be more interesting.
So, long ago and far away, John Sinclair, I guess it was in... I guess the late 60s or early 70s, he was sentenced to 9.5 to 10 years in prison because he was caught with two marijuana cigarettes. There was, I think it was in 1971.
A big rally
and concert at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor's Chrysler Arena. John Lennon.
He flew in. He wrote a song about it.
John Sinclair. Seeger was there. I think Nugent. Hey, we can say
amazing.
Nugent.
Yeah, we can say Nugent.
Yeah.
Did I do, the look wasn't
you
that bad.
Give me the look. Oh, it was about Stevie Wonder.
Really?
Yeah. Lots of other
my
people.
My gosh.
As well.
And you.
And me. And then I was three. Mom and Dad brought me.
They were such good parents.
They were. And then, amazingly, 3 days later, John Sinclair was released from prison.
Yeah.
That had never happened.
The power of music and mass gathering.
Everybody says free, you know, fill in the blanks, and they never free him.
Yeah, right, right.
So anyways, John Sinclair and millions of other people have become clients for the prison industrial complex because the political state has decided that we can only use certain approved intoxicants.
Yeah.
Like booze.
And then get drunk and drive, the single stupidest thing you can do. Sorry,
now,
but it is.
Oakland, California has become the first city to authorize large-scale industrial cultivation of marijuana.
Yes, this is a brand new news story out this week.
Can they please release everybody that is ever still in jail for anything to do with marijuana? Can they please expunge from the record of anybody ever convicted? Can the police please stop enforcing those laws? You know, you could do that.
That would be, great.
When I was a kid, cops used to come, they'd see us, and then they would frisk us and find our cigarettes, our regular cigarettes, tobacco. And then they'd say, you know, thanks, Pete, I love Lucky's, you know. And they wouldn't arrest us.
They'd just take your smokes.
Yeah, and so they could do that, because, you know, I hate to, I'm sorry, any police officers listening, but I know some of you smoke marijuana. Yeah. The City Council of Oakland, California, voted Tuesday in favor of a plan to license four factories where marijuana would be grown and packaged for medical use. I believe John Sinclair is a medical marijuana user.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you think he caught on to that yet?
I'm trying to think whether he said that in the interview that I recorded this week. The facilities would not be limited in size. So I mean, they're like
big warehouses.
Big warehouses.
Yeah, factories.
But would be heavily taxed and regulated. Supporters of the measure say it would create jobs and bring in millions of dollars to the city. Guess what the opponents say? They're against it because it's going to put the small growers out of business.
Are you kidding me? Well, this is amazing. California.
Yeah,
wow.
Let's go. Well, I can't yet get my brain around the really serious stuff that's breaking our bank and breaking our hearts and all that. So we're going to have to go with more broken heart stuff.
Oh,
Bristol Palin.
Poor Bristol.
Yeah.
Poor Palin's. Poor dysfunctional family.
I was out of the state, and in a sense, out of the country. Where I was, I don't even want to say. You know how I am.
It's a special little place.
A special little place.
In the middle
place.
Of nowhere.
And when I left, people saying, going back to America, huh?
that's amazing.
Yeah, and it was in the United States as well. So I don't know. Did all of this stuff break big about Levi and Bristol?
It did, it did. You know, shows like Extra and Insider, things like that. Yeah, Bristol, you know, they did the big Us magazine cover, she and Levi Johnson, because they were going to get back together.
Yeah, well, they're
getting engaged.
We're engaged!
Yeah, and they look so happy, and they're kissing, taking pictures. I mean, enough to just vomit over anyway.
And then they called Us Magazine, the opposite of Chelsea Clinton, who's as much as she could.
Was private with her wedding last night. Now, you can admit to everybody, Peter.
These publicity hounds.
You were the special celebrity guest at Chelsea's wedding.
That's where we were. That's what I can't say.
Yeah, don't tell.
And Bill said to me, going back to America.
So anyhow.
I said, Bill, you've trimmed down. You know, he's lost about 25 pounds.
He looks good. Looks good. The Clintons all look good.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so they're engaged. They're going to get married. They called Us Weekly. They got paid for the story. You know, vomit. They shopped reality shows. And then while Levi and Bristol were broken up, he had a little girlfriend. And the little girlfriend is pregnant.
Preggy's Lanicia Garcia.
And Bristol's heartbroken again.
Yeah. So all they're doing is texting now.
instead of sexting?
Right, right.
Yeah, but Levi's old girlfriend had sex with three different guys that week, so she's not really sure.
Including Levi.
Including
it's not
Levi.
Four, only three.
Yeah, right.
Hey, it's a modern woman. Give her a break.
I guess
it was
so.
It was a guy.
Go
who,
get
wow,
it. Go.
Was that guy cool? He had, you know, but.
Get on it, sister.
Let's see. Where
enjoy
did
your
I...
youth.
Yeah.
But why don't you use some birth control, people?
Yeah, and yeah, what is with Levi?
What? Levi is a wild stallion.
And plus, he's having, obviously, unprotected sex.
Which is, yeah.
Not real
it's
good.
Not real Palin-like, either.
If you're, well... Yeah,
well,
joking.
Sarah.
Yeah. Well, no, she. Well, anyway.
Yeah. She does it on purpose.
RadarOnline.com reported that Levi is set to shoot a music video with sexy R&B artist. Do you know this person? Brittany Spencer?
Oh, it's probably Brittany.
Brittany. Oh, yeah. Well, it's an I at the end.
Yeah, well, it's
Brittany,
just a different.
You're right. Brittany
yeah, yeah.
Spencer. Sorry.
I didn't know about this.
Yeah.
No,
doesn't
I
that really that give, part. Doesn't that really give me rock creds, though? The fact that I don't even know who the
it
hell
does.
A sexy R&B artist
big.
Brittany Spencer is.
Yep, big cred.
And so he's going to be shooting this music video, and the music video is based on Spencer's R&B song, After Love. And the concept for the shoot is a young couple's romance being thwarted by the girl's disapproval. Mother, this is too much.
It's a circus.
Yeah, yeah. You know, somebody is calling this, and I don't know. I think this phrase is a little, so why am I saying it? But they call it the Wasilla Hillbillies.
I like it.
Yeah, but you know, that, isn't that a little derogatory? Sort of poor
well,
southern rural
yeah,
people.
Yeah, I guess
and,
it is.
Yeah,
yeah.
Let's leave that one.
Okay.
Yeah. Anybody offended? We are sorry. I really mean that. I'm not saying if anyone was offended by that, isn't that what these guys usually say after they
they're
say,
sorry if anyone was, because they got caught
really,
saying it. Now, were you going to stop with at the absurd there, or...
You want to go on to...
Al Gore?
Al Gore, yeah.
Well, you know...
He's been cleared.
He was a sex-crazed...
Poodle.
Poodle.
Yeah.
According to the masseuse in the hotel there in Portland, Oregon. But, yep, he's cleared. Old Al...
They said, the cops said that there is, he was cleared of allegations he groped and assaulted a masseuse in a luxury Portland hotel. I mean, all the Republicans, of course, were delirious the fact that, that Al had
of
been.
Of course.
Now, it occurs to me, I mean, I have no idea whether this happened or not. I mean, the story of this woman sounds pretty shaky in all of the,
yeah.
The way it develops. And, but who knows? But here's the difference. Al Gore is talking about the environment. He's talking about a number of other political...
He won the Nobel Peace Prize.
Right, right.
He did not invent the Internet, nor did he ever say he invented the Internet.
But the point being, with all of these Republicans that get caught doing all this stuff,
yeah.
is Al Gore isn't self-righteous about his personal life or talking
gay
about
marriage
God
and all
that,
of that
stuff.
Right.
That's why that's the difference. So I don't, like I say, I don't know whether Al Gore did this or not. Let's assume, I don't care, let's assume he did. Let's assume he didn't. It doesn't make. I mean, if he did do that, I would think, what a schmuck, right?
Yeah.
If these Republicans,
be nice.
If these Republicans, when these Republicans do it and they get caught hand over fist doing this stuff, right?
Yes, yes, and very hypocritical, as you
yeah,
said.
Yeah, it's all hypocritical. That's the deal. Yeah. You know, I forgot to get this piece that I printed off. Let me see if it's still there. But anyway, that the Republicans they just see the possibility of them destroying,
taking over
mm-hmm. the House and maybe even the Senate. And I'm almost to the point where I was, you know, the Democrats are such a disappointment that I was, yeah, okay, why don't you take it? Because we know what your program is. It's for change in America. It's to improve it. It's,
What is it?
I'm
still going to the polls on Tuesday.
Yeah. Well, actually, somebody. There's
I
number,
am. All right? Absolutely.
I am. But I am not in the 9th and in the 12th. Gary Peters Sandy Levin.
This is the only place where you and I really
both
have
voted,
always gone off.
Both voted for
path.
this bill to fund the Afghan war. And, well, I'm not going to.
But I'm so fearful of a Republican getting
in there.
No,
I'm not. I mean, Sandy Levin, I mean, this guy is a Republican light, you know?
Well, I know.
Stuff like this.
But at least there's a light there.
Yeah, it is. And, I mean, he's got on things like civil rights, civil liberties, labor. But, you know, that we Let's get back in general to the idea that the Republicans would take over first the House and then the Senate and then even the presidency in 2012. And somebody like Sarah Palin those other
Newt Gingrich is rumbling these days.
So suddenly everybody would be shocked, and there'd be marches on Washington, and the people would be out in the streets. And then by 2016, they'd say, we got to get a Democrat back in there. But what's really happening? Let's see. Stick on the line if you're waiting, and we'll get to you right after the break, and that's about 5 or 6 minutes. There's an interesting article in Yahoo Finance. It says the middle class in America is radically shrinking. Here are the stats to prove it. This is extraordinarily troubling. 83% of all U.S. stocks are in the hands of 1% of the people. You get that?
Yeah.
Like, I own a few little things because of my 401k here at work.
1%
owns 83% of the stock, 58% of the American economy. You know what? Wait a minute. Let me make sure that I am not saying 48% of the American economy is finance. That means it's not about making things or providing services. It's about money making money. In other words, it is all just smoke and mirrors. I mean, that's really dangerous. 61% of Americans always or usually live paycheck to paycheck, which it was up from 49%, so it's increased incredibly. It was 43% in 2007. 66% of the income growth between 2001 and 2007 went to the top 1% of all Americans. There's going to be a pattern here, folks. And you know, one of the things you're never supposed to do is blizzard people on radio with statistics, because people they go, wait a minute, what
it's
is
kind
it
of the head spinning?
The
yeah.
head spinning. Here's what I would like for you to do. Let me read off just a few of these, because what should come across is not that you'll remember, well, maybe you will, 83% of all U.S. stock.
Remember the main point.
Yeah, exactly. This is the impression of what is going on in this country. I mean, we've always, rather than being a democracy completely, have been an oligarchy, the rule of a few, the ultra, you know, there is
1% pretty much owns most of everything.
Yes. Yeah.
The bottom line.
And what is it, the melting pot, right?
Yeah.
The scum rises to the top, and those on the bottom get burned.
Yeah, right. All exactly. Right. Speaking of that, real quick, Brian from Windsor says, he had a couple of different things about oil, but this goes with this. He'd like to ask all the hardworking lower and middle class Republicans, how's that trickle down theory from lower taxes on the wealthiest Americans working for you?
I like that. 43% of Americans have less than $10,000 saved up for retirement. 36% of Americans say they don't contribute anything to retirement. 24% of American workers said they've postponed their planned retirement age in the last year. 1.5 million Americans filed personal bankruptcy last year, which represented a 32% increase over 2008. Only the top 5% of U.S. households have earned enough additional income to match the rise in housing costs since 1975.
My gosh.
Yeah. For the first time in U.S. history, banks own a greater share of residential housing net worth in the United States than all individual Americans put together.
Wow.
In 1950, the average executive's paycheck to the average worker's paycheck was about 30 to 1. Since the year 2000, what happened in that year? Oh, that's when Bush stole the election from Al Gore, speaking of Al Gore. See, if he would have got the election, he would have stayed off that masseuse's couch.
Right, he needed therapy.
Yeah. The ratio has exploded to 300 to 500 to 1. You see the pattern here? It's developing more and more. This pyramid gets sharper and sharper. Rather than having there's classes under capitalism, and you could have a real, real wide-based pyramid. But now what's happening, it's just sharper and sharper and sharper at the top. So let's see what else is in here. As of 2007, the bottom 80% of American households held about 7% of the liquid financial assets. In other words, that's what you have right on hand.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know why they didn't say it the other way around. 93% of the liquid financial assets in American households is held by the top 20%.
Yeah.
So the vast majority of us ain't got squat. The bottom 50% of income earners in the United States have collectively own less than 1% of the nation's wealth. 50% of income earners in the United States collectively own less than 1% of the nation's wealth. Average Wall Street bonuses for 2009 were up 17% over 2008. In the United States, the average, well, this one, let's go through some of these. The top 1% of U.S. households own nearly twice as much of Americans' corporate wealth as they did just 15 years ago. More than 40% of Americans who actually are employed are now working in service jobs, which are often very low paying. For the first time in U.S. history, more than 40 million Americans are receiving food stamps. In what American workers now must compete against, in China, a garment worker makes approximately 86 cents an hour, and in Cambodia, a garment worker makes 22 cents an hour. And guess what? American and Japanese corporations are starting to move out of China. Because they're getting too much.
Wow.
And this is in a globalized economy, folks. In our labor as a commodity to be bought and sold, people always buy the cheapest, right? So these corporations care nothing about us, about our communities, about even our country. So don't expect that we have reached the bottom. Despite the financial crisis, the number of millionaires in the United States rose a whopping 16% to 7.8 million in 2009. The top 10% of Americans now earn around 50% of our national income. So, middle class, bye-bye. And read that every single week. Remember that thing from Fortune? Many plutocrats, they're talking about the rich, saw last year's wealth wasteland becoming a billionaire bonanza. Most of the richest people on the planet have seen their fortunes soar in the past year.
Upside down.
And there is X amount of wealth, and it depends on how it's distributed. So there's class war going on, my friend.
And it's on you, and it's on us.
And we so far have lost.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Hey, I'm here with incredible two-headed man, Jimmy and Harley.
Hey!
Now that you've won the Combos brand Mancation sweepstakes, how do you feel?
Our Mancation's going to take our brodom to the next level. Yeah, just think of the chicks we're going to score.
What kind of chicks can you guys score?
Hi, I'm Jenny.
I'm Julie.
And I'm Jill.
Whoa!
We're the incredible three-headed woman.
Yeah. Enter the Combos brand Mancation sweepstakes. Vote for mycombos.com. Combos, a snack that's more than a snack.
This is Matt Demmer from Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury. I'm here to tell you that now it's more important than ever to buy an American-made vehicle. We at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury are still in the business of leasing and want to help you. Whether you're looking for the hot new Lincoln MKS, the sleek Lincoln MKZ, or the hottest crossover vehicle, the Lincoln MKX, Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury in Dearborn is your one-stop shop. At our dealership, we believe in honesty, reliability, and support for our customers just like you. We encourage you to check out our virtual showroom on our website, Demmer.com. You can check out our vehicle inventory, and you can bet that if we don't have the vehicle you're in the market for, we'll do our very best to get it for you. While you're online, we invite you to get a no-obligation internet price quote. Whether you come into our newly renovated dealership or visit us online, we at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury invite you to experience the Demmer difference today. We're located on Michigan Avenue just east of Oakwood in Dearborn. Give us a call today, 313-274-8800. That's 313-274-8800. Or check us out on the web at Demmer.com.
Time's running out. You're maxed out on your credit cards. The collection calls are coming every day, and now you're two payments behind on your mortgage. Every time you turn on the radio, there's some cheerful couple telling you how they got out of debt overnight. Their stress is gone, and everything's just wonderful. Come on. The truth is, what sounds too good to be true is too good to be true. You need real help, and you need it now. Not bankruptcy. That should be your last choice. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're the attorney-driven program, dedicated to helping you get out of debt in months instead of years, saving you thousands, and without risking your family home. We know what we're doing. going, and we don't make promises we can't keep. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Get out of debt. Call Credit Card Relief at 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief. 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282.
101 The Riff. Detroit's rock station. 101 WRIF.
The Riff.
Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Lime scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove lime scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents lime scale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
Red Defender, thank goodness you're here. That huge asteroid is headed right towards Earth.
I'll handle this.
Like an arrow shot from a man-sized bow, the Red Defender hurtles into space using his super strength to stop the asteroid.
He's stopping the asteroid. It's moving away from Earth. You saved us. How did you do it?
I just stopped the asteroid and reversed its course back into space.
Look, the moon. It's... exploded!
Where exactly did you throw that asteroid?
Away. I threw it away.
No more moons. That means no more tides. Tides are created by the moon.
And no more walks in the moonlight. I love walks in the moonlight.
Saving the world isn't easy. Saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to three lives. To find out more, go to bloodsaves.com. A public service message brought to you by the Ad Council.
Back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
Hi, thank you very much, and welcome back to another segment. Thank you for joining us. I was just reading from a Yahoo Finance article. The middle class in America is radically shrinking, and what's happening is a redistribution of income. You know, these insane right-wingers are always talking about how some of the Democrats are about redistribution of income.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that they would, or oh, that we all, the middle class, the working class, would get some of the money that's been looted from us by the ultra wealthy.
The same benefits that the corporations get, but in a different way, right? Yeah. Just something.
Well, here, for this is, and I... this is from Friday, July 23rd. Wall Street spirits soar on robust earnings. This is from the New York Times.
Happy day for them.
Microsoft's profits soared 48%. UPS, 90%. People are shipping. Let's see. Caterpillar, 91% growth. 3M sales, 43%. Now, the stock of Yahoo went down. I mean, this is shows you how insane when you have an economy that's so wrapped up in the stock market, they increased profits by 50%, but it fell short of Wall Street expectations, so their stock went down. But in the meantime, so the richies are getting more and more money. Less and less money is going to the people that are out there working and creating this wealth. Well, let me say this. It's not real direct the way it used to be. I mean, when everything was based pretty much on production.
Like manufacturing.
Manufacturing. Now it is just in, you know, just numbers.
Yeah,
that,
just floating in the air.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah. There's no there there.
Yeah.
Jeff from GOP Hell, from Republican Hell in Indiana. They voted for, Indiana voted for Obama in the last election.
Mm-hmm.
But he
very well could be in an area.
Yeah, I think he wrote in before a call. Yeah, he said, Peter, it's pointless to recite statistics to idiot right-wingers. Well, I agree. But that's not who I'm addressing this to. What I'm addressing this to, these facts and figures, how that there has been this massive looting of the wealth of this country by the upper 1%, the upper 5%, to the detriment of the classes below them, is that we will start to do something. That and as I always say, people go, well, I don't know. What am I going to do? But one of the things that can be done, and I got to get more information on this. Bob King, the new president of the United Auto Workers. I didn't mention that last week.
He's
calling for a demonstration in Detroit, August 28th. It's the, what would it be, the 47th anniversary of Martin Luther King's march down Woodward Avenue with a civil rights march. Well, Martin Luther King, Bob King, is history repeating itself? I hope so. Martin Luther King led, actually, along with Walter Reuther, who was the president of UAW then, led 125,000 Detroiters down the street. And Martin Luther King gave his I Had a Dream speech.
First, here.
Yeah.
Now, Peter,
I was three.
Say,
my parents brought me to that.
They were such good parents.
They were such good parents.
Peter, is it the 28th, you say?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a Saturday.
That's right.
Perfect. Yay, I'll be there.
Yeah. Okay, so let's see. So that's, anyway, Jeff, I appreciate, idiot right-wingers, they're not going to be affected by the, they're getting looted and robbed. I mean, they're being funded by these ultra-billionaires. They're just tools of the rich. I mean, it's just extraordinary how these people get all in a froth about something that's not even happening, and they're working to their own detriment. Jefferson's facts tend to get in the way of what they've been told and what they believe. Love the show. Keep it up. Yeah.
I got an email from Anonymous. Wanted to tell you about something this person's mother said at the wedding reception. She was talking to her aunt from Canada. They all got turned around downtown because the president was here in Michigan.
Right.
So they were almost late. His or her mom said that he should be shot. I hate Obama. She said he hasn't done a darn thing in 18 months. Then the writer here says, I asked her how good she was after 18 months of marriage. Not very good, because she got pregnant twice. She blamed my dad. My Canadian relatives love Obama. Her mom's 83, naturalized citizen, Catholic, watches Fox News, Rush in the background. And she's upset because she can't believe her mom would say something about taking. That would be so tough. And I feel your pain, because I have a family full of Republicans. And I just found out recently my mom was at a big Republican rally. And I just thought, oh, my God, as she gets older, she's getting worse. You know, it really is hard to be the one and only liberal in a family, for sure. I feel your pain.
You, or did you mention this, convicted felon Byron Williams loaded up his mother's Toyota with guns strapped on his body armor and headed to San Francisco late Saturday night, one thing in mind, to kill workers at the American Civil Liberties Union and an environmental foundation.
I did not mention this, and why this did not get more coverage.
This is truly scary. He was stopped early Sunday by the Highway Patrol
this
for speeding
ago.
And driving erratically. He said he then initiated a chaotic 12-minute gun battle with officers firing a 9mm handgun, a rifle, and a shotgun. He reloaded his weapons when he ran out of ammunition and stopped only after officers shot him in areas of his body not covered by his bullet-resistant vest. So, I mean, I should have been playing Happiness is a Warm Gun by the Beatles. But what is so terribly frightening about this? This is just not one of your usual run-of-the-mill mass, what could have potentially been a mass murder that is so frequent in this country, an armed madhouse. But
this is outrageous.
I usually don't like to mention people's names.
But the person who fired him up was
this right-wing commentator who pointed out some of these organizations.
The one who cries with the chalkboard.
He keeps talking about something called the Tides Foundation, and I Google them, T-I-D-E-S, Tides Foundation. These people that do good, solid work, helping communities and what have you, and there is this insane character on television talking about the progressives sucking the blood out of the republic, going to start getting more and more violent. And the name of this article is that this guy's incendiary language is dangerously close to having a body count. I mean, most people that are affected by this insanity that comes out of the right wing, and it's almost all insanity now. The,
true.
I mean, the old line conservatives, the Barry Goldwaters and the the Irving Kristols and what have you, they're all gone, and it really is these fascists that are taken over that have
gun-toting fascists
that have they just become these crazed maniacs.
What happened? I would never thought in a million years that electing a black president would create this firestorm. But again, we should have expected it, Peter.
I saw this this poll said 28% of white people would vote again for Barack Obama.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I'm not very happy with him, and I don't know. Would I vote for him today? Well, I'd vote for him over John McCain. I'd vote for him over any of the Republicans,
I would
just
too.
Not to get these people in it. But am I happy with Barack Obama? Absolutely not. I won't even give him credit for some of the things that liberals and progressives tend to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that essentially what the last election was a referendum on the last 8 monstrous years of war and empire and torture and a destroyed economy. And to have said, yes, this looks good, I don't think that would have worked real well.
Right.
Ron Paul Rick, and Rick is a supporter of Ron Paul, who, by the way, voted against in the House.
This is a listener we're talking about, Ron Paul Rick.
To finance America's two wars, there was a supplemental $37 billion more for this rat hole of this war. And, WikiLeaks posted all of this material about the war in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. What was it, 92,000 pages?
Wow.
Some people said it was like the Pentagon Papers of the Vietnam War. But it just, whatever, right. Rick writes, WikiLeaks will soon post the classified film of the May 2009 bombing of Granai Village. Granai Village, Afghanistan, killed 140 civilians. This is by, sorry about that, including 92 children. U.S. dropped 500-pound and 1,000-pound bombs on them and has no remorse. Right back, Rick. Why, usually when they kill civilians in Afghanistan, it's usually accompanied by people saying they're sorry and paying off people. And, I think there is remorse. It's strategically, tactically, it's not like the United States forces there think they're going to get anywhere by killing civilians, which they've done at a rapid clip, just like in Iraq. He says nobody's above the law. Whistleblowers are heroes. He's talking about the WikiLeaks people that have put this stuff out. Our heroes refuse to be driven around like cows, who courageously make up their minds to become part of the solution for change. God bless them all. It's time for truth, justice, and peace, says Rick. We must shut down the Pentagon. Now, the Democrats split as the House backed these war funds. The majority party in this case backing the $37 billion for continuing financing America's two wars were Republicans. It was 160 Republicans and 148 Democrats. And shamefully, Sandra Levin and Gary Peters. Screw those two guys, man. I wouldn't vote for either of them. You know? Oh, a Republican will get in. Tough. Don't say that.
Don't say it. It's one of the words.
Yeah, it's one of the words. Yeah, right. I'm through with it. All right. Some people have really been waiting a long time. Okay. I will take this call, says our phone screen. By the way, Jade is taking your calls.
Stephanie's in
Stephanie
there.
Stephanie is taking your calls. Jade is in there as well, though. Here is, the name is gone, but they're from South Lyon. Welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air. Hello. Oh, after all this time, because I don't have the name up here. Are you with me? Okay, we're going to put you back on hold.
Yeah, you're probably listening to the delay, or you've fallen asleep while driving.
Right. Here's Jake in Dearborn. Jake, you're on the air.
How you doing?
Good.
I just wanted to make a few comments last week's show, Jalene.
Yeah.
Wonderful show.
Thank you.
Wonderful show, Peter. Miss you a lot, but she held the reins pretty good.
I'm ready to retire.
No, you're not. He's not going anywhere.
Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a few comments. Joe, as bad as that guy is,
Joe from Novi. I told you about him.
Oh, yeah.
He started a wonderful show by getting everybody amped up to talk.
He did. I agree.
That was a confederate of Jolene's. He was a plant.
No, he wasn't.
No.
Well, yeah, I tried calling last week, but I just couldn't get in.
Wow.
I love the comments you made about the 200. If you asked him if he made $200,000
a year. Yeah.
And he said no, and...
I said he had no business being a Republican.
And he's from Novi. Most of these guys are from downriver. You know,
he's
all
just,
these working class conservatives.
He's in his own little world over there in Novi.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
Joe, move to,
Taylor.
Or Southgate. Yeah, you can have a whole bunch of guys doing the rich people's work, you know, dreaming. All right, thank you, Jake, and thanks
he
for the nice remarks. Oh, I thought he did. You had more?
Yeah, I just wanted to make one more comment.
Sure.
I just wanted to send something. I'm hoping Lisa from last week is listening also this week. She was talking about her husband and her and the Social Security benefits and how hard it is for her to get it, for him to get on it. You know, I was on it my whole life. You know, I was born with underdevelopments, and as of 2008, they kicked me off of it and told me I had to pay him back $18,000.
What?
Nice.
So I just wanted to, you know.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
I just wanted to hopefully she's listening and, you know, just hopefully everything works out for her.
Shout
yeah,
out
for
to Lisa.
You, too. For you, too. Thanks
right,
for calling.
Jeff, indeed. Yeah. Let's see. Here is Jeff in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. How you doing, Jeff? Yep. Oh. I got to do this. I haven't been, I've been away a while. Here you are. Jeff, hi. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you for taking my call, Peter and Jolene.
Sure.
I'm actually vacationing down in Fort Lauderdale. I'm originally from Oakland Township.
You want to get some of that hot? You want to get some of that hot weather? All right.
Yeah.
I couldn't get enough in Michigan. I decided to come down to a little more muggier heat, I guess.
That's right.
Basically, the reason I called is kind of touch upon what you had mentioned before about redistribution of wealth.
Yeah.
And the 5% people. You know, I just came off a boat ride today with my kids, and it's a basically like a water taxi that takes you down to 8 channels.
Oh, you went up and down the intercoastal. I used to live in Fort Lauderdale.
Yes, and I didn't realize. I mean, we're familiar with Birmingham and Bloomfield Hills and a little bit more upper class wealth, but I guess my eyes have been opened up to the ridiculous amount of wealth.
Oh, you saw all the houses and the boats. Okay.
I mean, some of these people have 130-foot Mangusta yachts sitting in front of a $23 million mansion.
It's true. It's
and they're, like,
quite astounding.
Lawyers and CEOs.
Yeah.
And it's just, and I mean, the guy for Circuit City is having a new house built, and how many people lost their jobs with him closing down all those stores? You know, it's just, it's insane how this, like you say on the radio, and I guess for most people that don't get out and see this, they really don't have a comprehension of really what you're talking about until you see it firsthand.
Well, there's this enormous mansion. Where is it? Novi or something like that? That's
yes,
on auction or yeah.
Where is that?
I can't remember.
It is Novi, but I just don't know the exact location.
Maybe Joe lives
maybe
there.
Maybe Joe. He's renting the guest quarters.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been up and down that intercoastal, and those houses are unbelievable.
And every home is somebody of either a CEO or a celebrity or high-profile status. And like you said, I mean, this is they're not hurting for money. In fact, the driver of one of the water taxis went over about this property lot. The guy purchased it for $10 million, didn't like the house. Now he's demolishing the house to build a brand-new house. So, I mean, we got people in my subdivision, anywhere in Detroit, or for that matter, anywhere in most parts of the United States that are not even to keep their mortgage afloat.
Right.
And you got people that are buying a $10 million lot, don't like the house, so they rip it down to build a new one. Just, it kind of blew my mind away and really opened my eyes a little bit more to just the insanity that's going on right now.
Well, sure. You know, actually, I know people that, that sold a house outside of Miami for $500,000, and the next day it was gone. A scrape.
I doubled my money on my house down there in Fort Lauderdale, and then really, virtually within the year, now that's one of the worst areas.
Okay.
I mean, I got lucky.
Yeah.
Whoa.
All right. Thanks a lot. Enjoy your vacation, and talk to you when you come back. All right. Now, we got Matt from Toledo, who's unhappy with stereotyping of Republicans, and then we got Matthew from Toledo. Could these be two separate people? Let's see. Matthew, hi. Are you also Matt from Toledo?
I'm not. Well, no, I'm just a Matthew, but I was only one person calling. So.
Okay.
Hi, Matthew.
You're not on hold on two lines.
I shouldn't be. I don't know why I would be if I was.
Two different people, says Stephanie. Go ahead. So what's up with you got to go down river to get to Toledo. But go ahead. What's up, man?
I just think it's kind of funny on the comment that somebody made about how trickle down doesn't work, and which, how does a poor person, you know, hire somebody? You know, explain to me how a trickle up works.
Wait a minute, you're not defending the rich, are you?
Let's see here. I'm not really defending them.
No.
But the opportunity in America to become a millionaire, and with a liberal policy or, you know, politicians, and there's no way you can become one because they want to spread the wealth out.
Wait. The wealth is funneling upward. I mean, did you believe any of those statistics that it is getting more and more concentrated in the upper percentages, that an ordinary person, which I assume is like yourself, Matthew, has less and less of a chance, even though there's the number of millionaires is actually exploding. Overall, you and I have less and less of a chance to make the kind of incomes that, for instance, our parents did.
Well, yeah, thanks to liberal policy.
Wait. Who was in office for 8 years? Remember that? That's when it all occurred. I mean, listen, in fairness to you, it's happened under Republicans and under Democrats as well. It's accelerated particularly. This is Reaganomics, you know, to take all the restraints off of the capacity of people to concentrate as much wealth in their hands as possible. Certainly under Clinton, at least we had a surplus. But when it came to Bush, he just gave it all away to all the rich guys.
What's
right?
Clinton? It's a lie.
What's a lie?
The Clinton surplus was a flat-out lie. Didn't have a surplus.
Now,
he stole $844 billion from Social Security. It's a fact. It's been proven.
Well, you know what? That's a long, complicated story. I don't know. It is a kind of deal where figures don't lie, but liars can figure. But ultimately, we did have a surplus. Now, Bush, because he cut all these taxes for the wealthy, if it wasn't even, Bush could have even run all these wars based on his lies if he hadn't have cut the taxes on the wealthy. Let's forget about Clinton. I mean, that we have the deficit because Bush gave it all away to the wealthy. And this is Reaganomics. Reaganomics has destroyed the American economy. All right, I got to get on to Matt now. All right, here's Matt in Toledo. You're not, yes, Matthew. Sir. You're not Matthew.
No, I'm not Matthew. I'm
okay,
Matthew.
It's a different voice. We believe you.
Okay.
No, I was actually going to comment about how the young lady there said something about gun toters. Well,
I knew I'd get wait. I knew I'd
you
get someone upset,
you know,
on that one.
We are required, Matt, to do
commercials before the top of the hour. Hold on,
we'll get back to you. Sorry about that.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Jalene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Feels like time's running out. Maxed out on your credit cards, collection calls are coming every day, and you're two payments behind on your mortgage. You need help. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. Call Credit Card Relief right now. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. Call 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282.
If you want a new computer but think you can't get credit, think again. Just call Tronics Country right now. No matter what your credit status is, now you can own a brand new desktop or laptop computer. Your approval is guaranteed as long as you have an active checking account and can afford small weekly payments. With Tronics Country, there's no credit check. You will not be turned down. Call right now and order your new computer. You'll also get a free color printer and a free digital camera. Just call 800-990-2258. But that's not all. Call right now and you'll also get a free 22-inch high-definition TV with your paid purchase. You heard right. A free TV with your new computer. All you need is an active checking account and your approval is guaranteed. Don't wait. Call Tronics Country right now. Call 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks. 101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Okay. Look at those numbers.
Woo! Look at those numbers! Yeah! Can you believe we get paid to do this? It's only Monday. It's only Monday.
Excited about what you do? Well, pass it on. As a Junior Achievement volunteer, you can bring your enthusiasm to the classroom and give a few kids a little something extra to get excited about, their future. Share a little something of yourself. Be a JA volunteer.
For information on how you can get involved, log on to JA.org.
Play ball! Now pitching, Dave Black.
Dave is about to catch his opponent off guard. Not with his nasty fastball, no. Instead of a fastball, Dave will be hurling a tomato.
And the pitch.
Ooh. Using tomatoes as baseballs won't go over well with anyone. But if you're looking to hit the ball further and throw better, eating a healthy diet that includes fruits and vegetables is a home run. Packed with nutrients, they could help keep your body healthy and strong, giving you the energy you need to hit that grand slam. When you look at it this way, eating tomatoes is playing hardball against the competition. Run, throw, think, eat better. Can your food do that? Find out at smallstep.gov.
That's smallstep.gov.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
When I do it, I feel the blood rushing through me. My muscles tighten. And I keep going back for more.
Carmen Castillo is under the influence of Dana, her volunteer trainer.
Come on, Carmen, again.
By spending one day a week in the gym.
Tuck your chin, Carmen.
Dana helps neighborhood kids like Carmen develop interests that keep them away from drugs.
Hey, let me see your shoulder shift. Jab, jab, great.
Be a coach. A mentor, a volunteer. No matter what it is, you have something to offer.
Cool workout, Carmen. See you next week.
Log on to helpyourcommunity.org or call 877-KIDS-313 and be an influence on the kids in your community. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Mayhem Fest is coming Friday, August 6th at DTE, and The Riff has your tickets. Listen all day this Monday as 101 WRIF will be blowing out your free tickets to Mayhem Fest featuring Korn and Rob Zombie every hour, starting at 11 a.m. with Ann Carlini. One lucky Riff winner will also score the grand prize, a Rockstar Mayhem Festival guitar. Mayhem Monday. Listen and win from your Walk Right In Free Station, 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks. 101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan.
All right, Crocus says, and we agree, eat the rich. Hey, they're eating us. Right?
The top 1% runs it all.
Yeah, it's class war, and they have won. We're not even fighting back, folks. I just can't even believe it when you get these conservatives saying, the Democrats want to redistribute the wealth. I wish they would. They don't.
Yeah,
they make
really.
It a little fairer.
If it were only true.
Yeah, all right. Let's go back to Toledo. This is Matt in Toledo.
Hey, Matt, I have to say, I appreciate you're on the air, yes. And you called me a young lady. I really appreciate that. But I'm all woman. Okay, thank you.
Well, no, I meant it as a compliment.
No.
Your voice is really good. I like it.
Oh, thank you.
No. The thing is, I wanted to say was I got actually two things. The gun thing is, I was up in Detroit not too long ago, and I have a concealed carry in two states.
Uh-huh.
And there's the reason for it, because my job requires it. If I didn't have a gun outside of Tiger Stadium, my little girl and myself would have probably been killed.
Yeah.
I actually deterred the man when I stuck a Glock 9mm in his face after he tried to rob me and then tell me he was going to rape my little girl in front of me.
Hey, well, that's pretty bad. Now, what I wasn't talking about you, concealed weapons folks. I'm talking about these crazy teabaggers who are going to rallies at courthouses and carrying their guns with them,
well, no, yeah,
them in the air.
That's wrong. That's just wrong. But let me tell you.
I don't care if you have a gun.
That's a pretty unusual occurrence outside of Tiger Stadium.
Yes.
Know? Yeah, but go ahead.
Just in the Greektown area there.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's, I don't know. I've been to Greektown a lot. Maybe I'll have to bring my Glock.
With a city like Detroit that's diminishing by the day,
Peter,
and your liberal politicians and progressives that have run that town, and the state of Michigan is running it into the ground. Granholm has done nothing for that state other than give Michigan a bad name.
Well, you know what? I don't buy any of that.
I wouldn't blame it all
on
her at all.
You know what? To tell you the truth, Matt, I don't even buy your story about the gun.
You think he made that up?
I think you're making it up. Yeah, goodbye. Yeah, I don't know. I usually take people at face value, but somehow the idea that they're in Greektown and someone's going to try to do something to him and threatens to rape his little girl and he puts this 14-shot Glock in his face, and it just sounds like BS to me. I don't know. If it's not, I'm sorry, but it sounds like it to me.
From the bottom of your heart.
Yeah. All right. Let's take some more calls. Here's Joey. Joey, hi. You're on the air. Where are you calling from?
From South Lyon.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, what's going on? Hey, I was calling about what you guys thought about like other fuels.
Like what fuels?
Other fuels?
Oh, wow, you said butter fuels.
Okay. I'm not a progressive. I'm not a liberal. I'm not a Republican.
You're just Joy.
Yeah.
That's the best thing to be.
Well, that's my first name,
Yeah.
No, but I like listening to talk radio at times.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. I like to hear what everybody, say.
Cool.
Well, God, who doesn't want alternative fuels? Well, everybody that's hooked into the oil industry and the coal industry.
None of them want it.
And the nuclear power industry. They want to keep these poisonous substances at the core of our society. So
and then when they have accidents, they have other poisonous substances that they use to put out to contain the problem.
Like the dispersants.
Yeah, the dispersant. Was it Calexia or something like that?
And
that's going to kill people because they've been using it. Those people will suffer.
The oceans are dying as it is because of what we've done to it. I noticed there is a new book out called Four Fishes, and it's essentially what's happening to the so-called fish stocks. The whole idea that we're looking at this integral part of the planet as stock.
It's overfishing.
And the reviewer even said, our oceans. Well, it's not our oceans. We're one species here. And the whole problem is that we think it's our planet, our oceans.
It belongs to the animals, really.
It's their home, right?
Yeah. I don't eat fish. I don't have to have guilt, Peter Werby.
Yeah, I eat fish. All right, but yes to alternative fuels, indeed. In fact, it is a matter of life and death. Let's see, where are we going next? Here is Rachel in Royal Oak. Hi, Rachel. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say that what you said earlier about us not having the same opportunities our parents did, mm-hmm. my family, they came here from Russia and Cuba, and now I'm completely on my own. I work full-time to put myself half-time at OCC. I have given up all hope with either side. I'm never going to be able to get a degree here. been declined for loans left and right. I can't get grants. I'm actually moving to Finland.
Wow.
Giving up here.
Why can't you get loans?
They ask for my parents' income, and I don't have parents. So I'm declined on the basis of not enough information, but they won't accept the fact that, you know, sometimes things work out where you really are on your own. You don't have
sure.
other
How old are you?
I'm 20.
Okay, because they can still ask about your parents after you're 18?
Yeah, the federal law is that you're considered dependent on your parents for financial aid purposes up until the age of 24.
Wow.
Well, wow.
You know, in Cuba, university education is free.
I think Finland sounds great.
Well, in terms of civil liberties and yeah. what have you, I'd rather be in Finland. In terms
yeah.
of the, well, you know what? I would, since I'm an American, I could do Cuba in the winters and Finland in the summer.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I have free tuition there.
How come you can go to Finland?
Well, I was just offered a job there.
Really?
It's a lot of paperwork, but I can make more there,
yeah.
20 hours a week than I can make here working full time. And
well,
I have health insurance.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. Well,
wow.
I don't know. We used to have a faithful listener in Oulu. I know, I'm even forgetting how to say that. What is that?
We forget.
In Finland. Jacob.
Oulu.
Oh, Oulu.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, the university
said. Yeah, we have a listener there.
Yeah, well, we at least used to have a listener there. We haven't heard from him in months.
It's funny
just
that you
listening.
Say that, because that's one of the universities I'm looking at, that and the University of Helsinki.
Really?
Wow, well, we have a friend there. Maybe we can, you know,
well, I'll tell you, Oulu is above the Arctic Circle, so get ready for the winters.
I think I'll be okay, I hope.
Okay, well.
Yeah, well, good luck. And you can listen online over there. Well, actually, you can listen online, but you can listen to our podcast if you still want to listen to the show, and you can give us a call or email us from there.
Hey, I will. Thanks, guys.
Great,
best
thank
of luck,
you.
Rachel. Yeah.
You have a good night.
Yeah. So, how come we don't have free university tuition in this country? Oh, yeah, we got to fight all these wars all over the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we have to give all these billions and billions of dollars away so other people can make wars as well. To Israel and Saudi Arabia and Jordan and who else gets it in the Middle
name
East?
Name it.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we should give the phone numbers again real quick
yeah.
because we have a couple open lines.
Wow. Yeah. 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
And I wanted to alert you to 1 a.m. when this portion of the show will be over. I'll be interviewing John Sinclair, poet provocateur, former
Very
manager
cool.
of the MC5. And he's written, he's edited and written some of the material as well on Sun Ra, the cultural and musical impact of the legendary composer and band leader. This guy was really over the top. Also, Laura Eldridge, who has written In Our Control, The Complete Guide to Contraception Choices for Women. And, guys are all going to tune off. But
maybe Levi needs to listen to
Levi
this
Johnson.
Because apparently he can't wrap his business. The women need to take care of this.
Well, what do they do? What does he tell them, you know?
You know, he is pretty good looking.
Yeah.
He's so dumb. He just say, I would just have to say, please don't talk. Please don't open your mouth. Just shut up. Thanks.
Somebody who dropped off, they wanted to refute what we were saying about the dire straits of the U.S. middle class, that it's radically shrinking, and the statistics show it all. How all the wealth produced in the last 20 or 30 years, really, this is Reaganomics, has gone according to plan. It's all gone up to the high side, and it's come at the expense of the middle class and the working class. Of course, the poor have gotten really poor, and less safety nets. And we've got tens of millions of people on food stamps, 20% of all kids living in poverty. I mean, an absolute disgrace for a country that says it is the richest in the world, but it's the richest because there's the most amount of wealth here. But the distribution of income is increasingly to engorge the already wealthy. So then what do they do with it? They speculate with it on the stock market. They don't invest it in manufacturing firms so people can get real jobs. In fact, they preside over workers being cashiered. So this one caller who dropped off, he wanted, oh, here, wait a minute, let me Are you doing that?
No.
I know.
Peter.
I was trying to see the number of new millionaires has gone up considerably. So what the caller was going to make the point was that, the American system is working because there are something like 16% more millionaires. I mean, do they get it that the average person's income and wealth is dropping, and at the same time, other small number of people's wealth is increasing, that there's a relationship, that it's called looting? How come they don't get it? I don't get it. Why they don't get it?
Yeah.
All right.
Good question.
Let's continue on. Here is Lars. Lars is in Madison. Hi, Lars. Thanks for waiting so patiently. You're on the air.
I wanted to say, I'll preface it by saying I have Asperger syndrome, so I can actually comprehend how financial institutions work, and I work and I have no, partners and affiliations.
There's a benefit, right?
Yeah, there are.
I was saying it's like your preface isn't entirely true because there isn't a fixed amount of wealth. I mean, it's like if you literally redistributed all the wealth in the country, you'd be giving poor people like the hubcap to a Rolls Royce or shares of stock that would in companies that would have no value because there are no millionaires to buy it. I mean, it's going by verifiable numbers. I mean, granted, you know, wages have been stagnant for the past 30 years.
Well, they've actually now dipped so that in today's dollars, we're making less and less and less all the time.
No, adjusted for inflation, it's only gone up like 1% in the past 30 years.
Yeah, all right. It's gone up. It depends on statistics. Let me just run this by you. July 24th was the anniversary of last year's raise in the federal minimum wage, and there's no new increases scheduled. The minimum wage is so low today, it's $7.25 an hour, that it's lower than the minimum wage of 1956. 1956, which was $8.02 adjusted for inflation.
Wow.
The minimum wage sets the wage floor and affecting workers up the ladder. Let me see. Things are actually dipping, Lars.
Yeah, the normal distribution of wealth is it's an exponential curve where it's like even if you doubled the wages of everyone, people with nothing would still have nothing. You know, the people are making, you know, little over a living wage, you're making, you know, slightly comfortable wages, and then the people, you know, the millionaires are then multimillionaires.
You know what? What you're saying doesn't make a bit of sense. It's, you know, that people can be rewarded in a much better way. That there has if there was an authentic and fair redistribution of wealth in this country, you wouldn't have this enormous impacted wealth. So that when profits are being made, it wouldn't all go to the very, very, very wealthy people. That people would get it in wages, and that people then would do what? They'd have money to spend, and capitalism would just roll along. But the people in charge of things, they don't even have the common sense that would make their own system work well. So instead, they just are pathologically committed to greed and to looting the classes below them, because the classes below them, that's us, the middle class and the working class, don't do anything to say no. We don't vote in people that would support our interests. We don't have things like in other countries, general strikes or what have you. They try to screw with the middle class in France or Italy or someplace like that, and there's all hell to pay. And then suddenly the ruling class goes, oh, yeah, well, maybe we won't cut back.
Yeah, I've been in the middle of one of those protests in Paris, and it was just unreal.
All right, Lars, thank you. Actually, not thank you. That's mean, isn't it?
Peter.
Here's Robert in New Hudson. Robert, you're on the air.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
We're good.
Good.
At least I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
I originally wanted to ask you, as a 22-year-old college student finishing up my degree in business management, actually, what do you guys define the difference between, say, a Republican, a Democrat, or a liberal and a conservative? But I also wanted to add, I hope Rachel from Royal Oak is listening, because I'm very lucky. My mother works at the college I go to, so my education is free.
Really?
It's a blessing, you could say, or however you want to word it. She's worked at a few different other institutions, other colleges, since I've, been born. And I've noticed though that, I've worked in them and I've helped it with so much that, college has become such a industry of making money and not a service industry, mm-hmm. that it gets to the point where when you're trying to finish your degree or you're trying to tailor it specifically to how you want it, it's so structured that you have to do it that university's way that you're either going to pay way more than you were hoped to. You have counselors that the reason why they're counselors is because they get a little bit extra money instead of just teaching. And they do such disservice to actually putting the kid on a path to be able to graduate when they want. I've had friends who...
well, before, you know, I mean, can we look at a system that is increasingly corrupted at every level? I mean, for one thing, why are people having to pay for college? We don't have to pay for high school. People kind of take it for granted that, oh, yeah, when you go to college, you have to pay X amount. Why? I mean, why don't we want an educated population to the point where our resources are structured and directed towards getting everyone the best education possible? Well, one thing, we can't afford it because we're wasting all of our money on the military-industrial complex, the prison-industrial complex, on letting ourselves be, as I said earlier, looted by the ultra-wealthy. So there's no money. So what happens is, like you said, Robert, if you're not lucky enough to have somebody in the school itself, you leave the university with tens of thousands of dollars of debt or more. But that's part of class warfare again. As long as we say, okay, you know, we'll be in hock, we'll be indentured servants, the people that are making the money off of it are going to keep on taking it. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Here is Brett. Brett's in Port Huron. Hi, Brett. You're on the air.
Greetings. How's it going, guys?
Going good.
Yes, I was reading in this month's Playboy an interview with Princeton professor Cornell West, and he brings up this very interesting statistic that plays right into what you're talking about concerning redistribution of wealth. CEOs in the 1950s made about 25 bucks to every dollar for an average worker.
Right.
In the modern day in Japan, it's 11 bucks for the CEO versus a dollar for the worker. But the present day, United States CEO makes $275 for every dollar that a worker makes.
Right. And that has to do with the distribution of income. It could be done differently. Not that, that one CEO's pay would increase greatly the amount of money each worker would have. But if you reduced, for instance, how much was paid out to stockholders and that wealth that was created in a particular industry or financial enterprise was distributed more to the workers who are working there. I mean, that's what unions were all about. That's why the bosses and the corporations and the cops and the National Guard killed hundreds of workers who were just trying to get a little redistribution of income in the 1930s. I mean, that was class warfare. That's when we fought back, and that's when we established actually a middle class. It used to be all just richy rich kid and working class people and a small teeny weeny little class of merchants and all of that. Well, that expanded greatly, and our parents' generation expected to own a house and a couple of cars and maybe and even guys that worked at an auto plant could have a cottage up at Higgins Lake and all that, boats and all that. That is bye bye, you know, and it's because we didn't fight back.
Yeah, I'm definitely all for some sort of regulation at the CEO level on how much money they can make now, after seeing that statistic for sure.
Well, I wonder whether you could do that. I mean, what you really need are strong unions that say, well, look, I mean, I said on another show, what really had to have happened, I mean, Walter Reuther, one of the, the founding members of the UAW and one of the first presidents, he was there during the 1950s when General Motors and other car companies started thinking, if we went to the American South, we could pay people probably half what we're paying these union workers here in Detroit. So they took little job shops there and you know, they didn't have any big, I don't think they back then they had any big plants or anything like that. That should have been the point at which Walter Reuther said, we're going to call a general strike if one unionized plant tries to leave the state of Michigan or tries to leave California, where they had, you know, plants and other GM and Ford and Chrysler plants like that. Because what happened, this presaged the move of all of these plants, the auto plants and all the other manufacturing out of here. Because they figured, why should we pay Americans a decent wage so they can be in the middle class and then have their own home and have a boat and have a cottage and all that, when we can pay somebody in Bangladesh 22 cents an hour to get the same kind of work? Now, that's for, like, clothing, say. For automobile production, what you have now is a situation where, like, Honda workers are beginning to organize. So the same process that occurred here in the United States is happening there. Workers are saying, we're dying in these plants. They're unsafe. Actually, some of the plants, like in Mexico, the safety issues, that's not it. But still, these absolutely incredibly low wages. So, what are they going to do? They're talking about, well, maybe we'll move to Vietnam, because then we don't have to worry about Chinese unions or them paying a decent wage. All right, Brett, thank you. Actually, let me ask you this. What was the, I mean, I know you're only reading it for, I mean, people still read Playboy? That's amazing.
I'm not going to say that the pictures have nothing to do with it, but I do find that they're very interesting articles in the magazine. I think that's ultimately why I ever subscribe to it.
They've always had great interviews, actually.
They have.
And
I think it's pretty tame, Playboy, you know, really.
And Brett, I won't ask you how old you are, but you know you're looking at like 19-year-olds. That's kind of close to kiddie porn.
That I would have no chance with whatsoever.
Thanks a lot.
Well, just think about how sick Hugh Hefner is then. Come on.
Yeah.
He sleeps with him.
That is a little weird. I mean,
it is.
Isn't it?
His girlfriend's like 22 or something, you know?
Really?
Yeah.
Well, she's weirder than him. I mean, guys, you know, they're...
Well, she's got a new one.
Well, there could be within, some people have postulated
I see what you're saying.
A genetic drive within men to propagate.
Oh, okay.
Right?
To, yeah, have children.
Yeah. So you want fecundity. You've got all these big
words. What's that?
You want,
fertility?
You want the, so women, though, have a vested interest in maintaining the family unit.
Really?
In order to.
Who are you talking to? I have no family unit.
I know.
I have no desire to have a family unit.
I have a family unit.
Yeah. You never use it for that purpose.
Can we move on quickly, please?
Together again, Peter.
All right, yes. Here's Brad and Ypsilanti. You know who Ypsilanti was named after, Brad?
No.
What would you think by the name?
Mr. Ypsi?
Mr. Ipsy, yeah, He owned that bar down by that thing that looks like a unit. What is that? That big tower
down in Depot Town.
What is it? Yeah.
You talking down in Depot Town area?
Yeah. What's the tower? There's a big tower in Ypsilanti.
Oh, the water tower, the one that they say looks like a big penis.
Yeah, it looks like a unit. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Speaking of family units,
Ypsilanti was a Greek general. Oh.
Well, first thing, I have to apologize if my phone cuts off on you, because I'm not getting a good signal tonight for some reason.
Okay.
Sound good so far.
If I drop the call, I'll try to call you back.
All right.
But I'm glad to have you back this week, Pete. I think Jules was about to pull her hair out of her head from the Fox 2 guys last week. They were all supportive.
Oh, there was some hair loss, for sure.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Change the subject up a little bit. My buddy Dave had told me to watch this documentary on HBO. It's called Gasland. Have you guys seen it?
No, but I see.
Heard about it.
Yeah, I see on the screen here that it's on HBO.
Yeah.
And what's Gasland about? Is that about what they're doing up north in Michigan?
It's all over the country where they're drilling for natural gas. And basically, what has happened up there is a lot of people have depended on their well waters and stuff. It's all polluted now.
Because of this drilling, yeah.
When they go to turn their waters on in the house, they actually can take a lighter and light their water on fire. It's insane.
They show this in the documentary.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so all up in, for instance, the Petoskey area, that what's happening is that they're trying to get all these what they call mineral rights so they can drill down into there, but then they're going
right.
Yeah. But this
right.
is, you know, is gas is natural gas is considered a fossil fuel? No. Yes? No? I don't know. But in other words, that's another thing we ought to get off of. Did you see what happened in Chicago the other day?
No, I missed
big
that.
Big old building just blew out. Yeah.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Years ago, 100 years ago, Thomas Edison wanted to have a windmill at every single house to power for electrical use in the house and also to power your car because he was all about electrical cars. At one point, the majority of taxi cabs in New York City 100 years ago were, I mean, maybe 1909 or something like that, a little more than 100. But yeah, that's 100 years ago, were electric cars.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Then the oil companies moved
and
on in.
The combustion, the internal combustion, man, took over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the thing of it is I've always been a pretty big supporter of the Republicans, and I made a mistake of voting for Bush twice. And, you know, I that's something I should have never have done. I could actually see at this point, you know, with everything that happened in the last 8 years with the Bush and Cheney administration, you know, I could see Dick Cheney right now. My friend Dave says Dick Cheney's evil. Him and I've argued about this for a long time. And now, after watching that show Gasland, I could actually see Dick Cheney air guitaring to Metallica's Am I Evil lip singing.
He is. He's bad news.
Cheney is in the hospital. He's been in the hospital for about a month.
Oh, he's still in, huh?
He's still in, yeah. He is not doing well.
This could be the final countdown.
All right. Thank you. Oh, by the way, here, Brad, there's also a film called Who Killed the Electric Car, which is worth seeing. You probably have to get that out of
Netflix
or something like that. But, yeah, even a couple of people I know, the Ovshinskys, are in that, who are working out these little batteries for it all. But a pretty interesting film. Now they're going to have this thing, what, the Volt, that costs $41,000 and can go 60 miles or something.
Oh,
like
yeah,
that.
Right.
They got to do better than that. All right, Brad, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Julene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this. Did you know that life insurance rates are near record lows? If you don't have coverage, listen to this. AccuQuo can help save you up to 70% on a term life policy that's right for you. Pick up the phone and call AccuQuo at 800-654-2075. AccuQuo has helped hundreds of thousands of people save a fortune on their life insurance. Here's how. AccuQuo monitors hundreds of top-rated life insurance products so you can get the lowest rates. For example, a healthy 40-year-old can buy $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $21 a month. Rates for women are even lower. A short 5-minute call is all it takes. Call AccuQuote for a free life insurance quote at 800-654-2075. Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state. Find out how much you can save on life insurance. Call AccuQuote for your free quote. 800-654-2075. That's 800-654-2075. Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Lime scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove lime scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents limescale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187. 101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks. 101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome to our final segment. At 1 a.m., I'll be interviewing John Sinclair. Actually, I recorded it earlier this week. And John Sinclair will be at the Bookbeat. That's an independent bookstore. What a concept.
Yeah, still there in Oak Park.
In Oak Park on Greenfield at 10 and a half mile road in the Greenfield Shopping Center.
When is this, Peter?
It is Thursday, this coming Thursday, whatever the date is.
I'm going to miss it.
Oh, well, it's at 7 o'clock at the Bookbeat.
I'm getting all political because where I'm going, there's a lot of workshops and different political things involved. So.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a very political place.
Now, here, Aaron writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com and... I heard something about these tax breaks are going away and our middle-lower class taxes will increase. Is this true? I'm already overtaxed and underpaid. No more, please. Well, if you're underpaid, Aaron, you really shouldn't be paying too much taxes at all. But in general, both Michigan taxes have decreased and the United States income tax, one of the lowest in the industrial countries. The problem is we don't get much for it. We don't get a national health plan like we should, national universal single-payer health care like Canada or France or Italy or someplace like that. Instead, it all goes to the war. And what's happening here? And you got to really pay attention to this stuff because these Republicans, you know, are such liars. Lately, when I say that, it makes sounds like I've got some big pitch for the Democrats, which I don't. But
that just remind
the Republicans are actually they're these politicians. I'm not saying, you know, if you happen to be a Republican, I just disagree with you. But the Republican politicians are actually half of them are crazy. And they're all liars.
Okay.
There you go. Other than that, want me to tell you what I really think about them?
They're just fine.
Yeah. John Boehner has a nice tan.
Yeah, well, he does?
Yeah.
What happened?
He puts his... Anyway, look here. This is MSNBC.com. It says, most Republicans want to permanently extend all the tax cuts enacted during George W. Bush's presidency, nearly $3 trillion worth over the next decade. We are in hock. We have the deficit only because George Bush allowed I forgot what the total figure is, but at least a trillion, maybe it's more, at the same time launching this war. I mean, it's absolute insanity. So what the Democrats want to do is let the cuts for the wealthiest Americans expire. Barack Obama has pledged not to raise taxes on the middle class. If he does, screw him. Get rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
Just like they did to old Bush's daddy.
Yeah.
Remember, he said, no more taxes. Read my lips.
Oh,
and then
God.
He did. Yeah. Man. But you know what's really weird? The Republicans want to extend all these tax breaks to the ultra-wealthy, and they oppose extending unemployment benefits to...
The bastards!
To these people that are the victims of the economic recession that their policies created.
Which is what our show was entirely about last week.
Yeah, these people are evil.
Really?
Yeah. Let me see. I'm just curious.
Absolutely.
Somebody else just sent me something. You mentioned windmills. Here's a photo of what I see going down the highway towards Port Huron. It's windmills. There's actually big debates about this.
About the noise?
Yeah. Some people say it's, like, noisy.
I like the sound of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We should go kind of quickly because we got a lot of callers and...
It was my phone.
I thought you made a rude noise.
No.
So that's not your phone. Your phone is indicating that you have a text message, right?
It's not a text message. Someone's actually calling me.
Don't look at that.
That is
one of the rules.
No.
Here's Dave in Southgate.
No,
hey,
texting,
Dave,
and driving. No text and talk showing.
Hey, Peter. How's it going?
It's going good. Except for one little problem.
Yeah,
go ahead. Go ahead. She's sitting
technical
across from me.
Technical difficulties. They happen.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was calling. I was going to throw this out maybe to you and some of your other listeners. I had some problems with an attorney, and I wrote our attorney general, who, of course, is running for governor, Mr. Mike Cox,
right.
His office over a month ago in an email, and no response. I mean, do we think that maybe he's just too busy running for governor to
and he doesn't care about the
office response?
Yeah, well, he doesn't
care about a concerned citizen?
He does not care. He doesn't care. I'm telling you, he does not care.
I don't know much about the guy, but I would think that all that stuff would be handled by his staff. So whether
he's a Republican, he doesn't care about the little people out there and your little menial problems, right?
Yeah, actually, those things, Dave, are so difficult to you know what?
Why don't you call his office?
Actually, you know where to go is the American or the Michigan Bar Association. If you have a complaint.
I've done that as well, and I filed an official attorney grievance.
Is there still a better business
asking them to get disbarred, asking to have the attorney disbarred or at least investigated because of his actions, and I haven't gotten a response back from that yet either. So.
Well, it might be just an unfortunate case of them defending their own, although I thought they had gotten a lot better at that. Yeah, well, I'm sorry to hear it because, you know, you figure, oh, well, I got screwed. Let me see if I can get some justice here.
Yeah, and then from the office that's supposed to help you with that.
Yeah,
right?
And then it turns out to be just us.
Right.
Yeah. All right, I'm sorry to hear that happened to you.
Yeah.
But, you know, keep at them.
Call them. Call them.
Yeah, yeah.
Try it.
Write them a letter.
Be a pain in the ass.
You know, the other thing is to write actually a letter.
That's a good idea.
Give it a try. Sorry to hear that. 313-298-WRIF. Here's Alan in Shelby Township. Hi, Alan. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. Hey, Julian. How you guys doing?
Good.
Hey, good.
Doing good.
Well, you know, it's like they say about the old joke about attorneys. What do you call 1,000 attorneys at the bottom of a river?
I heard 3, but go ahead.
Well, it's a good start.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, hey, I even got one in my family, and ever since she got her, you know, card from the Bar Association, she's become a mindless idiot.
Actually, all the lawyers I know, because they all...
I was engaged to one of them. He was a blast.
Yeah.
Actually,
I'll tell you what.
I'll tell you.
But he was a criminal defense attorney.
Yeah, I know. I mean, the lawyers I know are all these. They do that kind of stuff.
They're a good time.
They're on the side of people. Yeah.
Well, you know, like I said, maybe I'm a little hard on her, but you know, I'm related to her, and I have to listen to her for every.
Yeah.
So she's just on your last nerve, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. She spouts things, and thinks because she's an attorney that she's right. It's like, you know what? Stick to criminal and family law. You know nothing about landlords and tenants, trust me. But that's not why I called.
Okay, what's up?
I was just thinking about what you were talking about, the mass redistribution of wealth. You know, it's like I've seen it in my life. I'm 41 years old. You know, I've lived through all of this, and it is.
Yeah.
Out here in Shelby Township, we've got buildings that had companies that are closed, houses that are up for sale, and they're trying to build more. And it's like, what's the point of building more?
Huh.
Somebody's making money. As simple as that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. You know, you talk about people like Dick Cheney. That guy is nuts. He's just psychotic. That's all there is to it.
Charles
well,
Mayer.
You know, and I don't know, I had a little, I thought I had an article here about that. But
when he shot his pal on the hunting trip? Wasn't that him?
These corporations are sitting on trillions of dollars now. They're not doing anything with it. They just it's almost like cash on hand. They realized, hey, wait a minute, we just laid off, say, 3,800 employees, and we made more money this year. So why would we hire people back? We'll just keep all this money.
Yeah, we're managing without all of this.
Yeah, the banks are holding on to all their money because they're nervous about loaning it because, say, you buy a house now. I mean, there's houses around me so cheap I can't believe it. But there's this incredible house near me, $142,000, that I actually said to my wife, we got to look at them. And long story, or she didn't want to do it. But so you could say, can I get a bank loan for it? Well, they're worried that $142,000 house that a few years ago probably would have been worth close to might turn out to be worth $120,000, and that the new owner would walk away. So they're just sitting on all this money. All right, Alan, I got to move on because we got to get all these calls. And thank you for your comments. And here is Tony from Cleveland. That's Detroit without the glitter. You're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing?
We're doing good.
You know, you mentioned you're against you know, oil, coal, and nuclear power, but, you know, what alternatives do you suggest, you know? Because, you know, you take a city like Wyandotte, and you convert that totally, you know, everybody in that city switched over to electric vehicles. The increased demand on that, that city power plant, you know, what you'd save in auto emissions, you just put out in, you know, in air pollution.
Well, that's well, you know what, Tony, that's actually interesting you say that. For one thing, there's some people that say, and I've raised this with people I've interviewed that have been advocates of alternative fuel, that alternative fuels do not have the capacity to meet the energy needs of a country like the United States. Well, usually what they say, that if we don't want to keep mining coal and all that that creates, if we don't want to keep having these oil disasters, which are disasters at every level from pumping it to transporting it to refining it to burning it, that we're going to have to really do mass conservation, is that we don't have to have lights on all the time. I mean, we've gotten used to lighting up everything. Maybe we're going to have to go with a lot more public transportation. I mean, look at here in the Midwest, Tony, if you're anything like us here in Detroit, man, you're used to your own car. I mean, you want to, I want to pop in my own car. I want to drive where I want to drive when I want to drive. And we're used to that. But what if it's going to kill the planet? Do we still want to do it?
You know, the thing is that, you know, that movie Soylent Green, yeah. Don't you think that's kind of prophetic in a way?
I hope not. Little Charlton Heston.
I mean, economically, environmentally, and the overpopulation.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you, Tony, here's what happens. In bad times like we're in now, people always come up with the worst-case scenario. And I'm not trying to say that those are exaggerated, the kind of things that people are put forth about ecological collapse or economic collapse. I mean, they seem to me to be possible. In good times, everybody says, oh, man, things are going to get better and better, and we're all going to make more money and all that. So I don't know. I mean, right now, unfortunately, we're all just spectators to our fate, whatever kind of unravels, the sort of the anonymous forces of the market or the biggies that really control, well, at least think they control things or do make decisions that affect our lives, like, you know, all that subprime mortgage stuff. Though that wasn't the anonymous forces of the market. Those were greedy guys that were allowed to do it by deregulation. But, I mean, until we can take hold of our own fate, and we've done that as people in the past. I mean, that's how we began as a nation. And we got to do it again. I mean, I'm not talking about we got to start a revolutionary war, but I mean, that throughout American history, at different points, not all the time, but at different points, we have taken charge of our future. And we're not now. We're just along for the ride. And the ride is on, as AC/DC sings, we're on the highway to hell.
Yes.
So we got to do something different. All right, Tony, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Let's see. Here is Jeremiah in Auburn Hills. Jeremiah, hi. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. First off, thanks for your time. I really respect your show and your viewpoints. It's opened my eyes to some things on the ride home from work many times. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
And I heard a comment at the end about the Chevy Volt. I work at the GM Tech Center. I'm not an actual GM employee. I'm under a contract for the OnStar project and everything. You might be familiar with the OnStar service.
Sure.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to bring a little bit further information about the Volt. Off of a full charge, it would get 40 miles without any gas, but it does have an onboard gas tank that would kick in and regenerate. And for off 7 gallons of gas, you can get about 300 miles off that thing.
Okay. Oh, that's good.
Wow.
Yeah,
it is highly priced, but there's a lot of research and development that was put into that. I basically just wanted to make sure that I kind of just stuck a little word out there for GM and the guys. I'm actually leaving my job to go back to college pretty soon, and I figured that'd be the least I could do is to just kind of let you guys know about that.
Well, you know, I appreciate that, and I wish I would have brought this article, because I saw this thing about the Volt, and it was comparing it to the Honda Prius.
The Civic Hybrid?
What
there's the Toyota Prius.
The Toyota Prius. They sold it at a great loss. boss for quite a while to establish
to get people
it.
To buy it,
yeah,
right.
And they did. And, I mean, I guess, given the state of GM, that it's, still, what do they call it? The conservatives call it government motors.
That's right.
They haven't paid it all back yet. That's a problem. But I don't know. I mean, I'm wondering, too, but what's this, this car, the Tesla, that hasn't quite made it?
Yes, Tesla's teamed up with Toyota, and they'll be putting out some joint products in the future, it looks like. I think that this competition is a good thing. And even the video game industry, for example, the PlayStation 3 was sold at a loss and a loss and a loss, but it's the software and the long-term commitment and the
sure.
interface they're trying to build up. So I agree. If there was anything they could have done to cut the price of the Volt, other than the $7,500 tax credit, I think they should have done it. And the other companies are probably going to come in and capitalize on the high price of the Volt. I think we're going to see Nissan is coming out with something called the Leaf, which is pretty impressive as well.
Yeah, Jeremiah, and I mentioned you might be even more interested in this because it also has an Auburn Hills connection, which is who killed the electric car. The good part of it was shot in Auburn Hills.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I need to check that out. It sparked my interest as soon as you said it.
Yeah, because it, I can't think of the name of the firm. If you Google Stan Ovshinsky, it's O-V-S-H-I-N-S-K-Y. O-V-S-H-I-N-S-K-Y. Energy conversion. That's the other thing you could Google. Energy conversion, that probably has another name to it. They've been doing incredible work throughout the years. All right, Jeremiah, thanks for bringing us that perspective. Appreciate it greatly. Let's see. Here's Martin in Roseville. He wants to give some suggestion to the guy that wasn't getting any results with the complaints about the lawyer. Go ahead, Martin. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. Hold on 1 second. Let me turn my phone off.
Okay.
Are you there?
I hope you're turning your radio off.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, man. You're on the air.
Anyhow, the fellow, he claimed that he had written Mike Cox without a response.
Yeah.
One time when I was in trouble with, the custody of my child,
uh-huh.
I wrote to Governor Granholm. She did not write me back. There's a fellow right now, a state senator, who's running against Sandy Levin for Congress.
Right.
And I'm going to tell you something. That fellow will return phone calls. He has written me detailed letters and all that kind of stuff. And you know what? There's no reason why people can't respond to their constituents.
Well, I would suspect, and I'm surprised that any politician knows that they don't have a staff, at least, that would be involved in that. What's the guy's name? Isn't it Eric Salatsky or something like that? What's the...
No, Michael Svetolsky.
Well, I was close.
For a lot of years, when I first met him, he was a state representative. Now
right.
he is a state senator.
Right.
He had a district office that he pays for out of his pocket. He pays the rent on this district office out of his own pocket so that all of his constituents can come in, air their views, ask questions, pick...
Well, so does Levin, but I'm not very impressed with him, and I'm not even going to vote for Levin again. I mean, he's got such a machine and so much... Levin does, and so much money and all these endorsements. And Mike actually has a newsletter which he hand-delivers. He says he hand-delivers it to all of his... to wherever it goes. I mean...
Are you talking about the insider, Michael Svetolsky?
Yeah, the insider, right.
Yeah, the insider, yeah. I'm on the mailing list. And I'm going to tell you this. Listen, a long time ago, I got into a scuffle with the manager of a Kmart. She called the police on me, which was totally unnecessary. And as I was leaving, trying to get in my car, the police showed up like, 4 cars strong.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I'm some kind of a terrorist. And listen, they would not let me get in my car and leave. So I finally got mad. I cussed them out. And I said, listen, my girlfriend will be here to pick them. Like, they arrested me.
Wait a minute. Did you call Mike? Because we're...
Yes.
All right. All right. Thanks for it all. Appreciate it, Martin. I got to roll on real quickly here. Oh, this is, here is Maurice in Detroit. Maurice!
Hello, Peter Julian. I just want to talk about the overweight fat city workers. I view the man and the woman trying to pick up a sofa and put it on the back of the truck, and they were so fat and lazy, they couldn't even pick it up. Two of them.
Well, wait a minute.
Maurice, that's not very nice.
And the other thing, wait a minute. If they were overweight, that doesn't mean they're lazy.
Yeah.
You know, most people that are overweight don't have the weight. Look, I gained 100 pounds. I know what I'm talking about being overweight. When you get fat, you don't have no energy to do nothing.
It's suffering, lugging that all around.
And it makes you fat and lazy.
What?
Hello?
Maurice.
It does make you fat and lazy.
One more stop. Michigan Living on City Gas.
It makes you fat and lazy.
Who are you talking to there?
Oh, I got a customer in the car.
Are you a cab driver too, Maurice?
I've been a cab driver the last 2.5 years. What you been, Julie?
We didn't know that.
Guess what? You know, I got a whole lot of stories, but like I said, the weight, you know, the extra weight will make you lazy because your heart won't pump enough blood to give you any energy.
Well, that's lazy is more of a
like
mental state.
Motivation.
Yeah, you don't care and what have you. Listen.
But the extra weight can make things more laborious.
There's something, you know, like a lot of stuff, like smoking and drinking and being overweight is always thought of as this individual problem, a matter of willpower and all that. And we know with drinking, it's not the case. Well, the same thing is true with the other aspects. Well, when you have a nation that has such levels of obesity, we're talking about it's a social problem that has a social definitions to it, and individuals fit within it. I mean, when you have that large a population with that kind of expression, you know, there's more going on than just somebody's, you know, not watching their calories.
Michelle Obama's on the case.
She's on the case. All right. Here's Eric in General Ypsilanti's town. Go ahead. You're on the air, Eric.
Good morning, guys.
Hi, Eric.
Yeah.
I'm fine. The real people who create jobs are a thriving middle class.
The
rich only create jobs if they treat their workers well. And another thing is my sorry congressman, Dingbat, as I call him, for the war, too.
Yeah, he did vote for the war. And so did Gary Peters.
Oh, almost all of them did, yeah.
Bart Stupak, who was really played a bad role in trying to restrict access to women's right to choose in the health care bill, he voted against the Afghan-Iraq $36 billion bill as well.
Interesting. So he cares about soldiers, just not women.
Okay. Or something like that.
Yeah.
Why Sandy Leavitt? I mean, here, the majority of people that voted for that war appropriations bill were Republicans. And so there was a lot of space, a lot of political space there for Sandy Leavitt and for Gary Peters to vote against it. And if they, you know, sometimes they want to, you know, they want it to pass, but, you know, I mean.
They just go along.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're sheeple.
Yeah. But they could have actually voted against it. And the bill still would have passed. All right, thank you, Eric, and my apologies to everyone left on hold because we're out of time. Jalene Jordan, thank you so much.
Peter, I'll see you in 2 weeks. Stephanie, great job on the phones, and thanks a lot for all your hard work.
Hey, next, John Sinclair, the legendary manager of the MC5 Polka
Provocateur.
Yeah, after these.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Do people sometimes describe you as a saver? A bit frugal, penny-wise, and somewhat thrifty?
You know, cheap.
If that sounds like you, you're going to love the newest addition to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Coupon crazy!
At MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, you'll still find great gift certificates for local businesses with goods and services on sale for more than half off. Find money-saving online coupons that you can download right now and start saving immediately. Log on to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com and save big.
With online coupons from Autolab USA with over 20
20 locations in the Metro Detroit area and a 12,000-mile, 12-month warranty. Hagopian Rug Care Center with 5 locations in Metro Detroit. They're the leader in carpet, rug, furniture, and tile cleaning.
If you're looking for ways to enjoy life and stay within your budget, then go
coupon crazy
now at MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. That's MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. Your online home for great ways to save big at local Michigan businesses.
Time's running out. You're maxed out on your credit cards. The collection calls are coming every day, and now you're 2 payments behind on your mortgage. Every time you turn on the radio, there's some cheerful couple telling you how they got out of debt overnight. Their stress is gone, and everything's just wonderful. Come on. The truth is, what sounds too good to be true is too good to be true. You need real help, and you need it now. Not bankruptcy. That should be your last choice. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're the attorney-driven program, dedicated to helping you get out of debt in months instead of years, saving you thousands, and without risking your family home. We know what we're doing. And we don't make promises we can't keep. The consultation is free and the relief is real.
Get out of debt. Call Credit Card Relief at 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief. 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282.
Mayhem Fest is coming Friday, August 6th at DTE, and The Riff has your tickets. Listen all day today as 101 WRIF will be blowing out your free tickets to Mayhem Fest featuring Korn and Rob Zombie every hour. One lucky Riff winner will also score the grand prize, a Rockstar Mayhem Festival guitar. Mayhem Monday. Listen and win from your Walk Right In Free Station, 101 WRIF.
If you want a new computer but think you can't get credit, think again. Just call Tronics Country right now. No matter what your credit status is, now you can own a brand new desktop or laptop computer. Your approval is guaranteed as long as you have an active checking account and can afford small weekly payments. With Tronics Country, there's no credit check. You will not be turned down. Call right now and order your new computer. You'll also get a free color printer and a free digital camera. Just call 800-990-2258. But that's not all. Call right now and you'll also get a free 22-inch high-definition TV with your paid purchase. You heard right. A free TV with your new computer. All you need is an active checking account and your approval is guaranteed. Don't wait. Call Tronics Country right now. Call 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. What a pleasure to have an old friend of mine back in the studio with me. He's been on this show any number of times. He's John Sinclair. Many ways best known for stuff that happened a long time ago, but is a man that continues to be an artist of today. I was looking at the description of him, the editor bio. It says, poet provocateur, John Sinclair. Welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
Thanks, Peter.
You like that? Poet provocateur?
Yeah, I endorse that.
He was also the manager. I like the way they always talk about the seminal MC5 manager.
Also, they don't say punk in there.
Yeah, right.
Always I had to explain to the modern audience that if you would have called the MC5 punks when they were active, you would have left with a broken head.
Yes, that was an insult. You're a punk.
You would have limped away at best.
You little punk.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
But now they were, and so many bands.
but they were seminal. You have to give them
that. Yeah, I mean, the stage style and the activity on stage. Well, John Sinclair is here because he's edited a brand new book. It's called Sun Ra. That's sun like the sun and Ra, R-A. And in many ways, it's unfortunate that I actually they even have to spell that out, that this man who played such incredible music for close to half a century is not a household word. He was active from the mid-50s until his death in 1993. He led what was called the orchestra, as opposed to the orchestra, and incredible lineup, sometimes numbering as many as 30 musicians on stage. He claimed to be from Saturn. Yeah. I never doubted him. Did you,
no,
John?
No, never. And, he seemed to have the voice of perfect authenticity when speaking of outer space.
And you, John Sinclair, were instrumental on any number of occasions to bring him into Detroit and into the Detroit area, including Ann Arbor. And so the new book is called Interviews and Essays. Sun Ra, you have a number of pieces in here yourself, including one, an interview with Sun Ra done in 1966. Yeah. But maybe flesh out a little for me who Sun Ra was, what his importance was, and why there's a book about him.
Well, he was a composer, first off, and a band leader and a keyboard artist who organized his orchestra in Chicago in the early 50s. And he trained and developed a whole generation of young jazz artists out of Chicago, like John Gilmore, Marshall Allen, Pat Patrick, Charles Davis, all these guys, Hobart Dotson, a lot of guys stayed with him for years. And he kept this orchestra together much like, what you would say, an avant-garde Duke Ellington for about 50 years in order to hear his music. You know, guys like that, as opposed to the general creative artist, can usually get some idea of what they want to say by themselves or with four or five guys. But a guy like Sun Ra or Duke Ellington, they need about 15 or 18 guys to interpret their music before they can even hear it themselves. So they end up keeping a bunch of guys on a payroll for 50 years. And he did that. And he is also a pioneer of electronic keyboard instruments.
Ah.
He was an early player of the Moog synthesizer, the Mellotron. What was that one, Stevie? One, the clavichord.
Sure.
All those things. Clavinet, I guess. And also, he was a pioneer in terms of artists putting out their own recordings. He had his own record label called El Saturn, going back to the 60s, 50s. Yeah. And in the 60s, they started releasing. He released an awful lot of records because it was the only way, again, that he could get his music heard.
Well, he played what probably is commonly known as free jazz. Much
free jazz or space music.
Yeah,
another
as he liked to call it. Wasn't there something else besides the orchestra? Wasn't there some adjectives there?
He actually told me one time that he used different names for the orchestra depending on which series of compositions they were dealing with. Mm-hmm. So there was the Solar Orchestra. There was the Miss Science Orchestra.
Ah, that's what I was thinking of, right?
There was the Intergalactic Discipline Orchestra, and in this case it's the Omniverse Jet Set Orchestra, because that's when, on the one hand, they started adding classical jazz compositions and arrangements by Fletcher Henderson and Duke Ellington and people like that to their space book. And then they started playing in Europe and other parts of the globe, Africa, Egypt. So he was an omniverse, taking in all kinds of music. Jet set.
And we should say, if you're listening on the radio...
you can't picture this.
Well,
sorry.
Well, even the word orchestra, if it has as its first three letters, arc.
Yes, so, to carry you somewhere else,
absolutely.
Was this concept.
He was so well known in jazz circles, he actually influenced a number of rockers, including the MC5, the band you managed. But he never...
Sonic Youth are also big followers of Sun Ra.
He never had great commercial success, though, did he?
No.
Yeah. I mean, was he, I hate to use this phrase, was he too far out?
I would say so. Yeah. Too far out.
He was. So,
He just penetrated the outer fringes of the popular recording industry. He had some records on ABC Impulse, which was a major jazz label, His best known album was probably Spaces the Place, which was on Bob Krasno's label called Blue Thumb.
I remember.
That was about his, and he had some on A&M Records, too.
Well, I remember. I somehow, when you said that, that just tweaked some memories.
Space is the place.
Yeah. You've heard it before, Peter. I know this. I've seen it.
I've seen you there. I've seen Sun Ra. Hey, tell us about, that this big event that you produced at the State Fair, was it 1970?
Oh, the Detroit Rock and Roll Revival,
69.
70, I was in a different location. I was on sabbatical then.
Courtesy of the state of Michigan.
Yeah, I was in the Upper Peninsula in 1970.
Yes. This was a famous guy. We don't want to, in fact, I'd like to stick with Sun Ra, but if you Google John Sinclair, you can see this was a man who John was sentenced to 10 years in prison for possession of 2 marijuana cigarettes or joints, as I've heard they're called.
Now I'm a patient, you know, here in the state.
Oh, that's right. So they used to put people in jail. Now the Oakland.
I'll boulderize my statement, but what I say is I might be a sick MF, but I'm no longer a criminal.
That's good. But back to 1969, the state fair grounds, this absolutely improbable lineup of everybody from Ted Nugent to the MC5 to...
Was Nugent on that?
Yeah.
I'm sorry about that.
Well, come on. You can't. He's a good guitar player. Let's not get into politics. Although you can. Anytime
I always
you
try
want.
And talk him into leaving Ted Nugent out of the litany of great Detroit artists.
Who else?
But the headliners were Chuck Berry, MC5, and Sun Ra. My idea was to illustrate the past, present, and future of the music. But Dr. John, the Night Tripper, made one of his first appearances north of the Mason-Dixon line on that show. Johnny Winter was on that, I believe. Ran the Funk Railroad, played their first gig on that festival. I'm not particularly proud of that either, but there it is.
You can go, I have seen any number of times. In fact, it might even be on my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. If you go down to on the left column, I think it says, Detroit Rock Concerts.
Oh,
this
really?
Poster.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite Gary Grimshaw posters of all time.
Gary Grimshaw, yeah.
Detroit Rock and Roll Revival, Michigan State Fair.
Oh, that will do it, too. And the list of people, you can't imagine that at a concert or a festival. You think it's maybe like a list of the best, you know, just a
right,
list.
Right. Well, that's the way it was then, though.
So you had these rockers that had even then, accessible rock and roll melodies and methods of performance. Suddenly Sun Ra hits the stage, Michigan State Fairgrounds, 1969. How did the crowd react? Do you remember?
Well, they liked it.
They loved it.
They always liked it when Sun Ra appeared. That's why I was always... It was a thrill to me as a concert presenter, a producer, to put Sun Ra up there in front of a bunch of kids that liked rock and roll, because I thought, man, they gotta like this. This is crazy. It's colorful. They swing, you know. Let's go to outer space. And there we go.
We're talking with John Sinclair. He's edited a brand new book from Head Press. It's called Interviews and Essays. It's about the legendary bandleader, pianist, poet, philosopher, Sun Ra.
It is.
I gotta say, I'm reading.
Oh, okay. But, I wrote that. No wonder it sounded so great.
Yeah, and on the back of the book it says, the orchestra, as it was called, their music touched upon the entire history of jazz, from ragtime to swing, bebop to free jazz. So how did they influence rockers then? Because rock and roll is pretty standard form.
But I mean, it's also a show business. It's about doing a show. Sun Ra really did such a comprehensive and powerful show with the costumery, the homemade costumery, lighting, sparkle, all this kind of stuff. It was really spectacular, especially with 12 or 15 guys all dressed in wild costumes and dancing around. So, you know, I mean, it's not very far from a Sun Ra performance visually to a Lady Gaga show.
Yeah, there you go.
She just doesn't have any of the music, you know. But the concept of doing a spectacular presentation, I think that influenced people. And then some really liked the music. But that was a much smaller minority. You don't hear much of Sun Ra in Styx or Boston.
No. And he,
with all due respect.
Now, one of the things I know, and this is very typical when listening to free jazz. We can say Dick Kernan, who hired me into radio.
Oh, my man.
Who is now the head of the Specs Howard School of Broadcasting and all that. He would refer to Sun Ra music as chair throwing music.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
I said, what does that mean? And he said, it always reminds me of like chairs just being pulled out a flight of stairs. So it didn't have the kind of hooks that we associate, particularly with popular music really any kind of
musical decorum, even in the most loud and brutal of rock and roll. It still follows a very set pattern.
And one of the things, I always think of it, and I don't know if we have to go that deeply into it, it always struck me as very male music in that all the women I've ever known couldn't stand it. And they would say, like, for instance, my wife, who would say, can you turn that down a little? And I'm thinking, what is it? Do you think it's like background music? It will sound like chair throwing.
Yeah, it'll really be awful if it's turned down.
So... this was music that it could be indescribable in many ways. Maybe I'm
searching. Yeah, it would be hard to describe it, particularly in terms of the framework of pop music.
Yeah.
It's totally outside that framework.
But Sun Ra had...
He's a very interesting character. There's never been anybody even remotely to resemble this guy.
Yeah.
As a public figure. He is a philosopher. When you would listen to him talk, he would be equating his musical constructs with outer space and trips to Venus and Mars and Pluto. Sometimes this would come into the lyrics. It was a trip. I think that's the other reason why you could get kids that liked rock and roll, psychedelic rock and roll of the 60s and early 70s, because it was trippy.
And the fact that you talk about how he was, that he influenced George Clinton, the Funkadelics, that is pretty good. That's a lot more obvious.
Big time.
Obviously, yeah. And tell us about some of the people, John Sinclair, in the book that you've edited, Sun Ra Interviews and Essays. That's quite impressive as well.
Well, I wanted to first off mention the Detroiters and former Detroiters that are in here. Ben Edmonds has a great piece about seeing the MC5 and Sun Ra at the Grandy Ballroom on acid. It's really a great piece. David Henderson, the great biographer of Jimi Hendrix, who incidentally just had a second edition of his, While I Kiss the Sky. It's really, really a good book.
Okay.
I got him to write an essay because I knew he was tight with Sun Ra, and Sun Ra had recorded one of his poems as a song, so... He kind of details from seeing him in the Lower East Side of New York and to being in Oakland when they brought him there for the Black Studies program, and all those kinds of things are in Henderson's piece. There's a great piece by a guy named Pete Gershon, who edits a jazz magazine of today called Signal to Noise, based out of Houston. But I was looking for someone to write a piece or contribute a piece on the orchestra now, which it's continued under the leadership of the saxophonist Marshall Allen, now 85, sounding better than ever. I saw him 2 months ago.
And they
85.
And they live communally, right?
Yeah, in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Still. So Pete Gershon wrote a great piece about the orchestra of today and what it's like to try and carry on this enormous legacy. They say they still have boxes of musical manuscripts that they have never played before. They just keep uncovering them, you know?
You know, John, what we're remiss in doing, this is my fault, we have not talked about that you're going to appear at the Book Beat in Oak Park Thursday, August 5th.
yes. Isn't it? Yeah.
7 p.m.
7 p.m. That's in the Greenfield Shopping Center at on Greenfield at 10.5 Mile Road. And also, when are you going to be at Crazy Wisdom?
The night before. The night evening before. Which is the 4th.
Wednesday the
4th at Crazy Wisdom in Ann Arbor, 7 o'clock. Yeah, I've been reading from the book. So I usually do poetry readings, as you know, but this, I read, the fact the first thing I read in Amsterdam was the Ben Edmonds story, because I knew they would enjoy that right off, you know. What a great story.
And if you're missing any of this, there'll be lots of links, both to the book and also on my calendar, on my website. I will have all the details of the Book Beat and Crazy Wisdom appearances of John Sinclair, which will be August 4th and 5th, next this coming Wednesday and Thursday. That's Peter Werbe. WERBE.com.
Hey, can I say just a word about Book Beat that your listeners who are in any way literate would find Book Beat to be a beautiful destination.
Yeah.
It's an old-fashioned bookstore run by a guy who loves books.
Yeah.
You don't really get that. When you think of Walden books, you don't really get a picture of a guy named Walden sitting there in his easy chair reading some books. You know, I don't know, maybe he's a sponsor. So, but Book Beat, it's the old books stacked up to the ceiling, little aisles between them. I love those kind of places.
And Kerry Lauren, the proprietor.
And Kerry Lauren,
Well, I was going to say, you go into the Book Beat in Oak Park, and you go, there's just piles of books that sometimes the spines aren't even displayed, and you say, well, I'd like a book on Egyptian surrealists, and he'd look at these stacks and,
he knew where each one was.
Grab it. Yeah. Sun Ra's the book.
I love going there every time. The other thing he does is he's been publishing facsimile editions of my first poetry books from the Artist Workshop Press, which you, of course, would have had the first editions.
Yeah.
Since we would run around the neighborhood and give them to everybody that we like. Here, have a book, you know.
Whenever you hear anything, by the way, and we can't explain everything, we're talking about decades of history. Yeah. So if you, Artist Long Workshop ago. Detroit, there's actually a great website dedicated to it. Just Google it, and you got it.
That's the good thing about today. If you get curious about something you hear about, you just say Google, blah, blah, blah. Oh, there it is, everything you ever wanted to know and more.
And then they know everything about you.
Well, there's that, they're going to know one way or another.
The dark side.
They got them cameras on all the time.
The book is Sun Ra, Interviews and Essays. It's edited by my guest, John Sinclair, on the Peter Werbe Show, and we'll give all the information again at the end. You did an interview with Sun Ra, the subject of the book, in 1966.
Yeah.
I just got the book handed to me by John, so I can't wait to go home and start reading it. What was the occasion? And all of a sudden, I don't know. You, I wouldn't define you by this, but there's a Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee song called White Boy Lost in the Blues. You ever hear that?
I know the concept.
Yeah, that's what, of course, I always felt I was, and you, this great...
I wasn't really lost, though. I don't think you were either.
Lost in the Blues. You can have a good...
I was right where I wanted to be.
You can that can be a good concept.
I was found in the blues.
Okay,
there
you go. But in your poetry, you've always had a great appreciation for blues players and certainly for jazz players. So, do you remember? I can't. But do you remember the first time you heard Sun Ra and what the?
There's a piece in there called Sun Ra Memories that I wrote. It was the end of a bigger piece, just to put it in a personal perspective, and I tell the story about this drummer named Roger Blank came to Detroit from New York playing with some jazz trio. And he was friends with Marion Brown, the alto saxophonist, who was a good friend of mine. And Marion had recommended that when he came to Detroit, he could stay at our house, save the motel fees, you know. And he would like us. So we were showing him to his room, and he unpacked his suitcase, and first he pulled out a little album player. Remember those? A battery-operated LP player. And then he had two albums. And they had these crazy covers. And one was called Supersonic Jazz. I'll never forget that. And the other one, I think, was called Jazz in Silhouette. And they had these rocket ships, like hand-drawn. It was totally bizarre for an album, you know, way before DIY. But these looked like somebody who didn't know anything about putting out an album and put these out. And he says, yeah, Sun Ra, man, this is the stuff. He didn't have any other music. He didn't want any. These two records by Sun Ra were going to sustain him on his travels all across the U.S. And so he played them for us. Well, that's some pretty far-out stuff, man. And then you start looking for them. It was hard to find Sun Ra records.
Where are you? Where would you get them? I'm trying to think
of it. Finally, this little company called ESP Disc, which was a tiny, minuscule specialty label in itself. But that was Sun Ra's big window on the world. He had three albums on ESP, and that kind of turned people on to him in the avant-garde. ESP didn't reach much farther beyond that, though. Well, so yeah. I was in, well, let me see it. 1966, I spent 6 months in the Detroit House of Correction as a marijuana criminal.
Right.
And I was released on August 5th, and one of the first things I wanted to do was go to New York City. They were having these fantastic concerts at the Village Theater, which later became the Fillmore East. And they would be like John Coltrane and his sextet, and Albert Eiler and his band, or wow. Cecil Taylor, or, you know, it was an avant-garde festival. Like I said, man, I got to go see this. And then I thought, they said Sun Ra was in New York living on the Lower East Side. So my mission was to find him and try to talk to him about coming to Detroit. I told him, yes, we had to bring him to Detroit. And it took another 6 months, but we got him here in the spring of 67. You might have probably at that. Community Arts Auditorium, Wayne State University, MC5, Sun Ra,
were you playing
Magic Veil Light Show.
Were you playing the saxophone?
Oh, with the MC5.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the end. Only at the end.
Yeah.
You remember that,
yeah.
Huh?
It's a weird thing to remember.
Well, I was influenced by the Sun Ra saxophone section. I was trying to sound like all of them at once, basically.
Hey, we got 2 minutes left, and I hope none of this, dear listener, has you scratching your head. And if
we hope not to offend you.
Well, I don't think we've offended you, but if you're scratching your head, this might be an entree into a whole new historical and even contemporary experience with music. The book is published by Head Press. You can go to headpress.com. It's available online as well. The book's called Sun Ra Interviews and Essays. My guest, John Sinclair, is the editor of it, has a number of essays, and as we said, an interview with Sun Ra himself. So we have 60 seconds left. Maybe what we should...
I also have another book from Head Press. That's my publisher in London. I have a book, a collection of my works called It's All Good.
Yeah, and
John Sinclair Reader.
You have your own website. I can't remember the
johnsinclair.us, bro.
Okay, that's good.
I'm an American.
If you want,
I don't care what they say.
If you want more of this, and I'm going to be there, come to the Book Beat. It's an independent bookstore on Thursday, August 5th. Correct.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's in Oak Park on Greenfield at 10.5 Mile Road in the Greenfield Shopping Center. The day before that in Ann Arbor, Crazy Wisdom Bookstore. It's downtown Ann Arbor, and the times on each of them 7 o'clock.
Seven, yes.
At both. Yeah. Check it out. Sun Ra, band leader, pianist, poet, and philosopher, composer, John Sinclair. Thanks for being on the show. Thanks for putting this all together.
No, Pete. Thanks for being here after all these years.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
Feels like time's running out. Maxed out on your credit cards, collection calls are coming every day, and you're 2 payments behind on your mortgage. You need help. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. Call Credit Card Relief right now. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. Call 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282.
101 The Riff.
Detroit's rock station, 101 WRIF.
The Ref.
Look at those numbers.
Woo! Look at those numbers! Yeah! Can you believe we get paid to do this? It's only Monday. It's only Monday.
Excited about what you do? Well, pass it on. As a Junior Achievement volunteer, you can bring your enthusiasm to the classroom and give a few kids a little something extra to get excited about their future. Share a little something of yourself. Be a JA volunteer.
For information on how you can get involved, log on to JA.org.
Red Defender, thank goodness you're here. That huge asteroid is headed right towards Earth.
I'll handle this.
Like an arrow shot from a man-sized bow, the Red Defender hurtles into space using his super strength to stop the asteroid.
He's stopping the asteroid. It's moving away from Earth. You saved us. How did you do it?
I just stopped the asteroid and reversed its course back into space.
Look, the moon. It's exploded.
Where exactly did you throw that asteroid?
Away. I threw it away.
No more moon. That means no more tides. Tides are created by the moon.
And no more walks in the moonlight. I love walks in the moonlight.
Saving the world isn't easy. Saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. To find out more, go to bloodsaves.com. A public service message brought to you by the Ad Council.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. Birth control contraception, something that usually is thought of as fairly technical. And certainly it has a technical and medical aspect to it that everyone using it should know. And this isn't just women. I mean, men often are usually, let's say, involved with someone of the opposite sex. But even when not, birth control should and often does come into play. But it's also filled, birth control is, contraception is, reproductive health and reproductive rights are filled with politics and history and what have you. Interesting book has come my way. It's on upon the 50th anniversary of the pill. It's been around that long. It's called In Our Control, The Complete Guide to Contraceptive Choices for Women. It's written by Laura Eldridge, and she's a women's health writer and activist. She lives in Philadelphia. Her latest books are The No-Nonsense Guide to Menopause and Body Politic, Dispatches from the Women's Health Revolution, both authored with women's health pioneer, the late Barbara Seaman. In Our Control, it's her first book as a solo author. We reach her in Philadelphia. Laura Eldridge, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, some of the guys, if they haven't already tuned out or are probably scratching their head and said, well, gee, I guess this isn't for me. Is this, I mean, the book certainly concentrates on contraceptive choices for women, but is this something that men should know about, women and men should listen to?
Yeah, I absolutely think so. I think one thing I was trying to do with the book, generally I was trying to broaden the contraceptive conversation, and I think that one part of that is really saying that for too long, contraceptives beyond condoms, it's really been about women and women taking responsibility and women having to make, you know, hard choices about do I want to take this risk or try this method or whatever, and bringing men back into that conversation I think is so fundamental and so important.
Well, particularly you would think when there's really a loving relationship, because we hear different problems with different types of women's contraception, and men ought to be aware of that. I mean, they certainly should be aware of, even we don't like to admit that there's a lot of casual sex, but hey, this is the 21st century, so even just out of a human, coming from an aspect of human compassion, people should be concerned about their partner in sexual acts. So this is the 50th anniversary of the pill. What has changed? I wonder, you weren't even alive 50 years ago, from your reading and from your work with Barbara Seaman. What has changed for women and for men with the advent of the pill 50 years ago?
Well, the pill has changed so many things on the contraceptive landscape, absolutely. And for so many women, it's been something that's absolutely revolutionized the choices they have when it comes to contraception. So it's been a really just totally changing the options. Since the pill was created, it's become a lot safer. When it first came out, it was a drug that had some dangers. It had about 10 times the hormones that today's pills have on average, although, of course, because there are so many different types of pills, there are different levels of hormones in each pill. But so one thing that's definitely changed in these 50 years is that the pill has become safer. Of course, it still has some side effects and complications, and some women have those more than others. But, I think what the pill did, it did a couple of different things. It basically provided women with contraception that when they took it correctly, it would work around 99% of the time or higher. It could work potentially more than 99% of the time, which was an efficacy that was just not available before the pill. So that's absolutely one thing that it changed. And I think in other ways, too, it showed that it really paved the way for other preventative long-term drugs, because it showed that healthy women would take the pill in the long term. And it sort of showed that patients would do that for certain positive health outcomes. And so now, of course, we have many of those medicines that people take preventatively for many, many years.
Now, religious conservatives at the time when the pill came out, and some even today, say that the pill was what opened the door to sexual promiscuity, that women could have what they call promiscuous sex and not pay the penalty. I always thought that that was an odd way of framing something that they're always fighting to support, that is, motherhood and full-term pregnancies and what have you. But that the pill is all, I mean, this is kind of commonly thought of, that the pill allowed a sexual revolution. It allowed women to, in many ways, function like men. You said the word responsible the other back in our conversation a few sentences ago, but the religious conservatives say this allowed women to be as irresponsible as men often were.
Yeah, I don't think that that's been shown to be true. I think a lot of those fears have been shown to be unfounded. The pill, the thing about it that's been consistently true is that originally when it came on the market, the thing that surprised even its makers, I think, was the extent to which it became the choice of partnered women, married women, and women in long-term relationships, far from becoming the choice of women who were looking for promiscuous sex. So I don't think a lot of those concerns have been borne out. Alexander Sanger, who's, I believe, the grandson of Margaret Sanger on the 50th anniversary, said that the pill is done, he said, the pill's done less than we hoped and less than our opponents feared, meaning like, and I thought that was a great quote, because what he was saying was, we had such high hopes, or people who made the pill had such high hopes for what it could do, mm-hmm. and people who were afraid of the pill believed that it would do so many terrible things. And in both of those cases, expectations have had to be revised.
The book is In Our Control, the Complete Guide to Contraceptive Choices for Women. My guest is the author, Laura Eldridge. It's published by Seven Stories Press. You can go to sevenstories.com, and there'll also be a link on my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com as well. You have a foreword to your book by Jennifer Baumgartner, and I was struck, and I wonder whether you were or not. In the first paragraph, she says how many times a week she has sex, and then in the in discussing contraception. And then in the second paragraph at the end, she says how many times her sister has sex in a month. And I suspect, to someone of your age, and you said you had just celebrated your 30th birthday, and happy birthday to you, that this probably doesn't seem odd at all. But the woman that you did so much work with, Barbara Seaman, probably she would have said, yes, this is a change of what can be talked about of immense dimensions. Do you get that sense at all? I mean, were you surprised? Did you go, whoa, I didn't think she was going to say how many times a week she was having sex with her. Go ahead.
Right. I think Jen definitely is somebody who, over the years, has been very open talking about different aspects of her life, but definitely her sexual life. And I think that there's a different comfort level for different people. I mean, I tell my story in the book, but, that's sort of where I had to stop, because that's where my comfort level is. I think what's very important, though, is get to a point where women can talk about these things with their doctors openly, with each other openly, and with male partners openly. And I think that a lot a tremendous amount has changed, you know, again, since 1960, when the pill was legalized in America. But I think for a lot of women, this stuff is still hard to talk about. And especially the more sort of gritty details, the more intimate aspects, things like, you know, the way that the reproductive, things that happen in the reproductive cycle or menstruation or different aspects like that are still things that are very difficult for women to talk about. Especially, I think, with male partners sometimes.
Do you think that's true for younger women, or do you think that's changing a lot in general?
I think that it's changing, but I still think that it's true. And I see that at readings, because I have an events that I do where I have met so many women, and so many women have been generous enough to share their stories with me. And something that comes across to me is how many women sort of deal with certain problems silently and never really do talk about them. And so I believe that while it is changing, there still is a lot of discomfort, and there's still a lot of work to be done in terms of saying, listen, this is an aspect of our lives that we need to talk about just to, you know, protect our health.
Mm-hmm. Laura Eldridge, in your book, In Our Control, in your very first chapter, you talk about contraceptive history before the 21st century, and you say flashback 100 years to 1910. You know, it's interesting. There was only contraception available was that men had to practice, unless you were doing the rhythm method. And you may even do that quote, the joke you have in the book. Well, here it is, actually, on page 210. What do you call people who use the rhythm method? Answer, parents.
Well, so, and of course, I told that to, in the book, what I talk about fertility awareness methods. So what I was trying to do is draw out the differences between the rhythm method, which I think is something that most people sort of are generally very wary of with good reason, because that's something that is called a calendar-based system, which is based on guessing when women are fertile, versus something like fertility awareness, which looks at actual symptothermal things in the body. So body temperature, things like that, changes in the body over the menstrual cycle to estimate fertility. But I think to go back to your original question, yeah, thinking about the changes since 1910 or the turn of the century or whatever, it's amazing. At that point, the Comstock laws had made birth control illegal in America, except for natural birth control, as you say, like withdrawal.
By the way, but before, let's just emphasize that a little. The Comstock laws and that sending out information about birth control or actually providing it was it a federal statute, wasn't it? Or was it just a New York state? But in any event.
It was all over the country. Basically what the Comstock laws did was they allied birth control with other kinds of so-called smut. So with pornographic materials and things like that, as a way to prevent birth control methods from going across state lines and all these other things. It basically illegalized birth control. The process of re-legalizing birth control, which Margaret Sanger, who is, you know, the mother of the pill, the process of re-legalizing it very much had to do with the work of Margaret Sanger and other really courageous women who were willing to open illegal clinics and do all kinds of things and push laws and bring court cases and basically take it to that point. Now, of course, even when birth control was illegal, people were using it. There was a thriving black market. You had people, of course, buying condoms. You had people buying diaphragms that were smuggled in from Europe and other places. So people didn't stop using other methods. It just was very difficult to get them.
Yeah, and a lot of these early feminists and women who supported a woman's right to have contraceptive devices went to jail, including Margaret Sanger, who's worthy. In fact, there has been any number of biographies of the life of this woman. The only thing that strikes me with since the repressive forces, the sexually repressive forces of society went to such lengths to stop people from having access to contraceptive devices everybody didn't, all women didn't have 10 children. I wonder, you know, what was up? What stopped everybody, every woman from having a baby every time they had sexual intercourse?
I think, like I said, that, you know, a lot of people were using birth control anyway, even though it was illegal. I think Andrea Tone, who wrote an absolutely marvelous book called Devices and Desires, I think argues that very effectively and also shows the way in which people push back against the Comstock laws. For example, judges giving people slaps on the wrist when they were brought up on charges of, you know, violating the laws, distributing contraceptives. So I think even though it was illegal, there was a certain level of cultural acceptance, and people still did use birth control methods.
Mm-hmm. The book is In Our Control, The Complete Guide to Contraceptive Choices for Women. The author is Laura Eldridge. It's published by Seven Stories Press. You're listening to the Peter Werbe Show. Now, one of the I suppose, drawbacks to depending on the pill, even in its best form, in its most medically refined and modern manifestation, is that it does not protect, as condoms do, against any sort of STDs. Sexually transmitted disease. Well, how does a woman, and what do you say in your book, In Our Control, how does one balance that? One may very well, for a lot of reasons, which we won't mention, want to not have the male wear a condom, yet one doesn't want to take the chance of an STD.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, unfortunately, you know, that right now condoms are the only way to prevent sexually transmitted infections if you're going to have sex. So the condoms are only going to have increased relevance for all of our lives until we find another way to do that. There have been hopes and trials. People thought, well, some scientists thought, well, maybe diaphragms could do it, but the trials were sort of disappointing and they weren't better than, you know, the diaphragms with condoms did not decrease, you know, the risk of getting AIDS in some of these trials. And so, so I think there have been hopes that other things would help, but right now, for women who and men who have multiple partners, really, condoms are the way to go, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe then the challenge becomes improving condoms, making them, you know, feel better, making them things that are easier for people to use, that have more sensation, that carry body heat better, improving them, which, of course, is something that's definitely happened in the past years, but maybe needs to continue to happen.
One of the chapters of your book, In Our Control, Chapter 10 says, what about the boys, or why is there still no pill for men? What's
right.
the status of that? I thought there was.
The pill for men is always 10 years away, has been 10 years away for decades. And I think it's a really interesting question. It's a really complicated story, and that's why I gave a whole chapter to it, because, of course, I think as a woman, one of the questions that we always have is, you know, why is this my responsibility, you know, most of the time? And the answer to that question, like I said, is really complicated, and has to do with you know, drug companies not being overly interested in developing male contraceptives. Of course, they weren't really interested in developing the pill before it became very clear that it was going to be accepted in American life. So in terms of, you know, R&D, drug companies are always a little shy. It's much easier to go with Me Too contraceptives to create, you know, another birth control pill with a different progestin or something like that than to really try to do new stuff, because it opens you up to lawsuits and all kinds of problems. You know, part of the problem has been that, you know, finding the right steroids, finding the right hormones that will last in men's bodies that don't have to be put in, you know, all the time. And you know, the trouble of innovating, looking for methods that aren't hormonal, of course, that's really far away. The ones we're closest to for men are hormonal methods. And when they come, they're, I'm sure, going to have, you know, problems just like the women's hormonal contraceptives do in terms of side effects and things like that. And so men will, like women have, had to, you know, consider these things and weigh the benefits versus the risks and make, you know, some tough choices.
Mm-hmm. Well, the women, of course, if their birth control, if the contraception of the sex fails, she's the one that has the child and might be either in a marriage or out of a marriage, not welcome. The man probably, you know, a little distant. Guys are often not thinking of the consequences at the moment of passion. And I wonder how well it would be accepted among men. I mean, there almost seems to be, and there's been work done in this, I don't want to get too much into determinative, but maybe there is that the drive, you know, the inherent genetic drive of the man is to reproduce the species. So the idea that you would know that you would be infertile at the act might just at some real deep-seated point in the male psyche not be very welcome. I don't know.
You know, most studies show, actually, I think there are a couple of ideas that inhibit the development of male contraceptives. I think one of them is that men don't want them. One of them is that women wouldn't trust men to use them. And I think these ideas, you know, there's obviously, they're more and less true depending. Most studies show actually that women would trust their partners to use a contraceptive and that men would be willing to do it in relationships, at least, partner men. So I think it's important to really dig into a lot of these ideas, because I think if we don't, we'll never have that product. I think.
I was going to raise the trust issue. You answered that. I guess it would depend, as you said, if you're in a relationship, it'd be pretty strange for the man to say, yeah, I'm taking a male contraception pill and not being. However, in casual sex or dating sex, it might not. It might even, I can think of really worst case scenarios. Like a guy wants to assure that the woman is going to be attached to him. And says, oh, yeah. And then he could just say, oh, must have failed. But, you can always think of worst-case scenarios, I suppose, huh?
Yeah, and it's always, I think, always whenever we have a new technology, there's always the fear of, like, will it make people use condoms less? Will it give men, would it provide men with opportunity to discourage women from asking for condoms, things like that? And those would be things that we would have to negotiate when and if this drug were to come to market. And by the way, it probably wouldn't be a pill. It probably more likely... from a hormonal perspective, would be an injectable or an implantable.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Some of these, don't they have, you in your book, In Our Control, you mention a thrice-yearly shot that women can take. Is that's on the market now?
Depo-Provera? Yeah, Depo-Provera actually has been around for a long time.
Well, it shows what I know. Yeah, go ahead.
Depo-Provera was developed in the 1960s in Brazil. But it was not, and it was approved internationally much earlier than it was in the United States. It wasn't approved in the United States until the 1990s. Depo-Provera was one of what I call the alternative distribution methods, which I think we sometimes, when we think about birth control, think the last 20 years have seen a lot of innovation. But when you start to name those innovations, so the patch, the vaginal ring, the Mirena, which is an IUD with hormones, Depo-Provera, which is a shot, or Norplant, which now isn't on the market anymore, or Implanon, which is the implantable devices, you realize these are all hormonal methods. So these are all building on the innovations that allowed the pill to be created.
What we've seen with
them is that they have unique benefits and unique risks that are different from the pill, and they have a lot of things in common with the pill because they're building on those innovations.
I would, given the direct tone of much of your book, I probably could ask you very directly, but I guess I'm a little more old school. I was going to say, if you were going to make a choice in a situation like this, is there a method that you would prefer for yourself?
Yeah, I have my preferred method, but I think every woman is so different. And not only that, I think women throughout their lives will find that different methods are probably appropriate at different moments. And that was part of what I was trying to say is that, again, coming back to my mission of kind of broadening the contraceptive conversation to say, let's make this an intergenerational conversation. Let's think about this, when we're in our teens or whatever, approaching sex for the first time, and when we're in our, late 20s or mid-30s or early 40s, that these are different moments in your life, and the things going on in your life are going to be different, and that means that different birth control methods may be appropriate, and they may not. Some women find one, and they love it, and they stick with it forever, but that's not the case for all women, and so that was part of what I was trying to say. So I have my preferred, but I know that it wouldn't be right for a lot of women, and likewise, I think, every woman should realize that her method, if it's right for her, may not be right for other women.
Well, now you have, of course, the option if someone, if a young woman, or any woman, came to you and said, gee, Laura Eldridge, I'm really confused. What kind of contraceptive choices for women are there? You could say, well, here's my book. If someone came to you, you wouldn't say, oh, I think you should do this. You would really say that it would take a conversation of some involvement, I guess is what you're saying, right? I mean, there...
Absolutely, yeah. I think so many factors will go into determining what's going to be your best method. So that's why I think it's so important to learn about all of them. And then, to as you move forward and you try a certain method, to just sort of, be honest about how you're feeling, about what's going on, and say, is this good? Am I happy with this? And if you're not, be willing to say, well, let me do some more learning. Let me do some more research and see what else might work better for me.
Mm-hmm. Does it make any sense? I mean, it just occurs to me, tried and true seems a lot safer, given that sometimes you say, oh, here's this miracle product, and, fill in the blanks for what, diabetes or anything
right,
under
right.
the sun, and then they go, woo, well, I guess it had a few side effects we didn't know. So the the tried and true methods, they are tried and true, aren't they? I hope.
Well, I think you're making a great point, which is Barbara Seaman, my co-author, used to say, my old co-author used to say, never be the first kid on your block to try a new drug. And perhaps the same thing is true with these new contraceptive devices or pills or whatever. I think, we know so much about barriers. We know so much about regular birth control pills, regular combined oral contraceptives. So I guess from a safety perspective, yes, that is a better place to be. Of course, maybe your particular situation is leading you to say, I really need something that, for example, I want hormonal contraception, but I don't want to have to take it every day. Mm-hmm. Or, I don't want hormonal contraception, but I don't trust a diaphragm or a condom. So maybe then you look into an IUD or whatever. So I think, again, everybody's situation is going to be different.
Well, the book is In Our Control, The Complete Guide to Contraceptive Choices for Women. It's published on the 50th anniversary of the pill. My guest has been Laura Eldridge, and it has an interesting foreword by Jennifer Baumgartner. It's published by Seven Stories Press. You can go to Seven Stories, spell the number out, sevenstories.com, and it's there. It'll also be on my site. It's Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E. Laura Eldridge is a women's health writer and activist, and her latest books are The No-Nonsense Guide to Menopause, Pause and Body Politic, Dispatches from the Women's Health Revolution. And she's authored these with women's health pioneer, the late Barbara Seaman. Thank you so much for being a guest on my show.
Of course. Thank you so much again for having me.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit. That's the sound of people throwing out their old dehumidifiers. They've replaced them with the energy-saving Wave Ventilation Unit. Wave Ventilation expels moisture, gases, and toxins trapped in your basement or crawl space and replaces it with drier, fresher air. The computerized Wave Ventilation requires no maintenance. There are no buckets to empty, no filters to change. And compared to a dehumidifier, it will save you hundreds of dollars a year in energy costs. One customer wrote,
I was stunned by the difference. I had a dehumidifier for almost 20 years without ever getting rid of that musty smell. And now that smell is finally gone.
Wave can transform your home into a drier, healthier environment. Satisfaction guaranteed. Find out more about Wave Ventilation right now.
For free information, go to goodairnow.com. That's goodairnow.com. Or call 1-866-324-9481. That's 1-866-324-9481.
If you want a new computer but think you can't get credit, think again. Just call Tronics Country right now. No matter what your credit status is, now you can own a brand new desktop or laptop computer. Your approval is guaranteed as long as you have an active checking account and can afford small weekly payments. With Tronics Country, there's no credit check. You will not be turned down. Call right now and order your new computer. You'll also get a free color printer and a free digital camera. Just call 800-990-2258. But that's not all. Call right now and you'll also get a free 22-inch high-definition TV with your paid purchase. You heard right. A free TV with your new computer. All you need is an active checking account and your approval is guaranteed. Don't wait. Call Tronics Country right now. Call 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258.
I will take it.
Everything that rocks.
It's ridiculous, but I love it.
101, The Riff.
This is what you've all been waiting for.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Settle down, people. Settle down.
The Riff.
Try me.